just remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Good morning, Vietnam, and good timely greeting to you, dear listener. Welcome back to another exciting installment here at Play It Again, Kyla. This is actually a very special installment. It's the first installment in a new series that we are embarking upon here at Play It Again, Kyla, and that series is going to be discussions on my favorite films of 2019. I felt like this was a good time to really dive in and discuss these films, because if this were a normal year, we would be entering into the thick of Oscar season here. All the Oscar bait movies would be being released in theaters, but since this is not a normal year, and we're probably not even going to have a normal Oscar season, no films are getting theatrical releases right now practically, and so I feel like this was a really good time to go back and re-review my favorite films from the 2019 Oscar season and the 2019 Oscar campaigns. And so the first film that we're going to dive into is Little Women. We'll be dealing with Little Women today. Then we're going to take a slight break from this series for a couple of extra special Thanksgiving and end of November themed episodes, but then we'll be right back into my favorite films of 2019. But I was so excited to have this discussion with the guest that I have on the show today. It's none other than dear friend of the pod, Sarah. Sarah is my resident Timothée Chalamet stan, so as strongly as I feel about Natalie Portman, Sarah feels about Timothée Chalamet. I am going to pull rank on her a little bit, though. Like, I have felt this strongly about Natalie Portman for 14 years. Sarah has felt this strongly about Timothée Chalamet for just a couple years here, but the obsession does rival my obsession, I will say. I will admit that. And so we're going to try to be as impartial as possible, though, in discussing his performance here, which I don't think is one of his strongest performances to date, but we'll get into that in just a moment. But Little Women is undoubtedly one of the best films of 2019. Greta Gerwig is undoubtedly one of, if not the most talented filmmaker who is of the up-and-coming filmmaking generation, who is still, you know, yet to reach the zenith of her career. And so I'm super excited to see all that she's going to give to us in the future, but even more so right now in this moment, I'm super excited for the conversation that I'm sure I'm about to have with Sarah. So let's just go ahead and dive on in, shall we?
This is Meg, Amy, Beth, and Joe.
My girls have a way of getting into mischief.
Ow!
I know.
Amy, you're the only sane member
of your troublemaking family.
I want to be great or nothing.
Beth is a shy girl.
My wish is to have us all to be together.
Beth is perfect.
Joe, would you like to dance with me?
Joe is a lost cause.
I intend to make my own way in the world.
And Meg?
Thank you, Aunt March.
Oh, why?
I want a home and a family.
Don't leave. You'll be bored of him in 2 years, and we will be interesting forever.
Women have minds, and they have souls, as well as just hearts.
You're not angry at me.
Life is too short to be angry at one sister's.
Where'd you get the money?
Well, I only sold what was my own.
You're one beauty.
Like a boy. Rated PG.
So here today to help me discuss the film of the hour is a special returning guest, Sarah. Introduce yourself, Sarah.
Hey, people. I'm back again. I know you missed me.
Sarah, you're the only person that I have listeners that actually refer to you as a friend of the pod. Like,
what does that mean?
Like, you're like the most closely associated with the podcast of any of my returning guests,
oh,
I think.
Oh, that's so nice.
Which is really interesting because you've only been on two episodes before, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
People just assume. They're like, if Kyla's doing something, Sarah's there.
Yep.
All right. So the film of the hour, if you've glanced at the title of this episode, which I'm sure you have because you had to click on it to get here, is Little Women. And Sarah's here for a very specific reason for
that,
this.
That reason being Timothée Chalamet.
Right. That's the reason we're doing this Little Women episode. And that's the reason Sarah's here. We're actually doing the Little Women episode because it truly is one of my favorite films from 2019. And before we dive in and allow Sarah to monologue about her love for Timothée Chalamet, we first need her to answer a few questions about the films of 2019. So welcome to my extra special
2019 series getting to know you questions. Sarah, are you ready to answer them?
Sure.
All right, so my first question for you is, how many new movies did you see in 2019? You don't have to give me an exact number.
Okay, but, like, I was going to say that's going to be complicated. I saw a lot in theaters in 2019. I mean, not as much as like previous years, and more than this year, clearly.
Definitely.
Probably, if we're saying movies overall in 2019 or just movies in theaters?
New movies, like movies that were released in 2019. Okay. How many do you think
and
you saw?
Probably 25. 25. Right. I'll say 25.
You had seen a lot of the Oscar contenders when award season came around.
I tried to keep up with them last year the best that I could because I didn't want to like be rooting for something and not know anything about it. So just because there's like an actor.
AKA every person that rooted for Judy. No one knew anything about that movie.
I watched that one this year.
Yeah, you did watch that this one this year. And we were like, why was that a thing?
Yeah, I don't know. That was weird.
It made like $400,000 at the box office and still managed to win Best Actress. No hate towards Renee Zellweger, but just like...
Just not what I would expect. I don't know.
Yeah. But so you kept up pretty good with new releases of 2019.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
So what was your favorite film from 2019?
I hate to be basic, but I might have to say Little Women. I don't know. I saw a lot of like crappy movies in 2019 too. Like really crappy movies, but... I feel like Little Women's probably my favorite out of all of them, just because the cast is great and everything. I don't know. I really liked it. I think it might be my favorite, and not just because of Timothée Chalamet.
Listen, most people, if like you just asked me off the cuff what was your favorite movie of 2019, I would say Lucy in the Sky, and it's just because it's the only Natalie Portman movie that came out that year.
Then
so
I guess it's cool for me to say Little Women.
I can't fault you.
Yeah.
So my next question, Sarah, which this answer can be different from the previous question, or it could be the same, but what was your best picture pick from 2019?
So the one that won was Parasite, correct?
Yes,
okay,
correct.
I really liked Parasite. I really did. It's one, like, I'm not one for rewatching movies. We talked about that before in other episodes, but... This Parasite would be one that I would rewatch over and over again. Like, I really enjoyed it, and I like that kind of, like, mystery type, you know? I don't know. I really liked it. And so I think I agree with their choice of Parasite being the winner for Best Picture. So I think Parasite. I'll stick with that.
All right. And my final getting-to-know-you question about the films of 2019, what's a film from 2019 that you think everyone should see?
I hate to be that person again, but Little Women, because it's, like, perfect for all ages. It's, like, a really good movie. I don't know. It's a very, like, heartfelt, you know, good family movie. I think anyone could watch it and enjoy it. Women empowerment.
Women like, empowerment.
It's great. So, I mean, I really liked it.
It is a really good, like, family movie.
Yeah.
It really is. So before we dive in and discuss the nitty gritty about Little Women here today, I'm going to offer some behind the scenes fun facts as I always do. I don't know if any of these are going to shock you, Sarah, but maybe they'll surprise some listeners at home. They're not like you. They don't sit on the IMDb page of every Timothée Chalamet filmography entry.
Or watch all the interviews that he's in.
Yeah, that's what a couple of these are from the interviews. Because they were, like, I'm going to be honest, the promotional tour for Little Women was so good.
Yeah,
like,
it was. They came out with a lot of interviews.
And to
have... Different facts, too. It wasn't, like, all the same.
Right, and this cast worked, like, the chemistry between them was so palpable that they could pair any of the actors up and send them out and it would work well. And so, like, you had Saoirse and Timothy, like, doing certain things, but then you had Timothy and Florence doing certain things. And I loved it when they would pair Saoirse with Greta because you always got really interesting information out of the two of them. Yes. And then also you have Laura Dern.
Yes, love Laura Dern.
My favorite interview, I'll link it in the show notes, is when they're talking about Laura Dern having seen Baby Yoda at a basketball game. It just lives rent-free in my brain.
I
hear Saoirse Ronan's voice going, "So is it actually Yoda, or is it, like, a baby?"
Yeah.
And it just...
I remember that. We watched that because we were at a hotel because we were at Disney, or we were going to Disney.
Yeah.
And I remember us both, like, we had different rooms because it was, like, a big, like, condo thing. We had this, like, we had different rooms.
We had adjoining bathroom.
Yeah, adjoining bathroom. And I remember you we texted each other at midnight. I'm like, "Oh, I'm just watching Little Women interviews." And you were like, "Me too." And I was like, "Which one?" And we were watching, like, the same one.
Yes.
And I was like, our minds, like, we think alike.
Galaxy brain.
Yeah, we literally were watching, like, the same, like, it was around the same ones, I'm pretty sure. It might have been the same one.
I think
one.
It was.
Yeah, because it was really funny. I just remember that.
And my favorite, though, is they're like, She's like, Timothy said that he thinks Lara actually thinks she saw Baby Yoda. And they're like, but she's too smart for that. Yeah. You guys got to watch this interview if you haven't. It'll be in the show notes. Yeah. But my first fun fact, this is something that I actually noticed watching the movie. And so then when I found an actual fact that validated it, it made me feel really good that I had noticed this. Each sister in the movie is given their own color palette for their wardrobe. So Meg is always in lavender or green. Mm-hmm. Joe is always in red or indigo. Beth is always in pink or brown. And Amy is always in light blue.
Blue, yeah. I was about to say blue.
And Marmee wears a combination of all those colors throughout the film.
Queen. I love that.
Isn't that so cool, though?
Yeah, like, it is.
We're going to talk in depth about the wardrobe for this movie. But, like, there's costume designer Jacqueline Duran was really doing a lot. Like, she's talented. Yeah, she's
true talent.
Mm-hmm, a queen.
A queen.
Another interesting wardrobe fun fact is that Jo never wears a corset throughout the duration of the film, and she's the only female character for whom that is true.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't need it. She's like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I can do what I want.
And costume designer Jacqueline Duran, you know this one, Sarah, and this is one of my favorite fun facts about this movie. Made duplicate costume pieces to fit each of Joe and Laurie so that it would make it look like the characters were trading clothes.
Mm-hmm. Which is so smart.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, if
I
you
feel
look,
like they are the same size because they're both really small. Like,
they are.
You know what I mean?
I feel like Saoirse's like taller.
Yeah,
than
I think
even
she
though,
is. I think
is she actually?
She might be. We need to Google that.
I actually found that during filming they used forced perspective and different things to make Timothy Chalamet look taller because he's not actually like is he 5'10 5'11
he's short like I mean not short but like
he's not
shorter than the ladies in the cast for sure
yeah because you have some statuesque women and so I just think that's interesting that they were like, we got to make him look taller.
He looks like hunched in the movie at some
he
point.
He does. He's and always like bent
over. I think he's just like that, but I wonder if they're like stay more hunched because you look shorter when you do that. You know what I mean? But like he looks like he's got like back problems.
He does.
It's like that shrimp sitting in the office chair.
Hey,
meme.
Sarah, you know why his back hurts? Because he's carrying the weight of the movie.
I don't think
that's
he is,
not so. True though. That's really say, not
I,
true.
The fan, I'm a Timothy Chalamet fan, but I don't think he carried the weight of the movie.
He's really not, and I'm not to be controversial on main Sarah, but when we get to his performance, I have a few bones
no,
to pick
I,
with
oh,
him.
Oh, I do too. Trust me. I roasted him. I
yes,
roasted him
you
during
did.
The movie multiple times. Yeah.
We'll get there when we get there. Next fun fact though is that Eliza Scanlon actually plays the piano in character as Beth. She practiced for 3 hours a day to prepare for the film. Because playing piano live was a prerequisite for the role of Beth.
Hmm.
I like that Greta Gerwig was like, whoever I cast, they have to play the piano.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if she got some piano lessons from Timothée Chalamet, because he can play the piano.
Of course he can, and of course you know that. Emma Watson took over the role of Meg from another Emma Stone, who had originally been cast in the role, but then became unavailable because of the promotional work required for The Favourite. And this is really interesting because the exact opposite was true for La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Watson was originally cast in La La Land, and then the role fell to Emma Stone because Emma Watson became unavailable because of work for Beauty and the Beast.
See, I like Emma Watson in this role much better.
I cannot picture Emma Stone.
No,
and here's,
not at all.
This is like, it's no hate against Emma Stone. Like, I like Emma Stone, even though I have a little bit of beef because she won Best Actress the year that Natalie Portman was nominated for Jackie, but it's fine. Like, I've always really liked Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she loves the Spice Girls, so we're kindred spirits, but I cannot imagine her playing young Meg.
No, I couldn't either.
Like Emma Watson, I understand Emma Watson is 30 years old. Like I do.
She could like
but
look
she,
younger.
Yeah, she you know? Has that quality mm-hmm. where she can play way younger. Below her age believably. Emma Stone, it's not that Emma Stone, like she's not old, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's just like
she just I couldn't see her
being
doing that. Yeah.
I couldn't see her being necessarily like physically believable as like the young insecure Meg, like the Megs who's like, oh, I'll give you the money for the limes because I remember what it was like to want pretty things and not be able to have them, you know, like I don't see Emma Stone in that
she's
role.
Not as like when it comes to like acting wise she's not as like calm I feel like as Emma Watson is. Like Emma Watson's more of like that like chill, you know.
Emma
what I mean?
Watson's acting is understated, and I feel like she gets flack for that sometimes, but I really appreciate that in this role in particular.
Me too, for sure, because that's like kind of what Meg's like character is like, you know, she's the older sister, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not
but I would I would kill to see the La La Land that would have been made with Emma Watson and Miles Teller, because they were the original two cast.
That would be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, again, Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling are great.
I love them, yeah. But yeah, that would be cool to see. Mm-hmm.
Greta Gerwig and Meryl Streep, not Greta Gerwig, Saoirse Ronan and Meryl Streep. I actually type Greta Gerwig, though. That's why they're so similar in my brain.
And they look a lot alike.
They do look a lot alike, but I was obviously like, I don't know, I was typing so many facts. I was like, Greta Gerwig. No, this one's not about Greta Gerwig. Saoirse Ronan and Meryl Streep had previously competed against one another for the Best Actress Oscar in 2018. That's just hilarious to me, because I imagine, like, Meryl Streep bebopping up to set, and, like, she's, like, this child, and, like, the child has actually been nominated for an Oscar against you. Yeah. Neither of them won that year.
Yeah, but that's still pretty cool. I mean, I'm sure Saoirse Ronan, like, really appreciates that, because, like, she's so young, you know, and that's pretty cool. I mean, to have that, you know, accomplished is cool.
Yeah, to be able to say that you went up against Meryl Streep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
This next one is about Greta Gerwig. Greta Gerwig's life partner is director Noah Baumbach. Both Gerwig and Baumbach adhere to the practice of working with the same actors repeatedly. Gerwig has joked that they now share custody of Laura Dern, because Laura Dern appears both in this film and Baumbach's 2019 film Marriage Story, the latter of which won Dern the Best Supporting Actress Oscar. Little Women and Marriage Story competed against each other for Best Picture.
Oh, okay.
I really like that they both do that. I like when directors do that, when they work with the same actors over and over. I mean, I don't think it's like a necessity. I don't think every director needs to do it.
Not every director, but some directors.
I like it when a director has like a little coterie of actors, like, because you just know that they know how to get certain performances out of those actors. And what's really interesting to me is that Greta Gerwig was hesitant to cast Saoirse Ronan at first, and Saoirse Ronan like campaigned for the role. Like, I think it was while they were doing promotional work for Lady Bird that it came out that Greta Gerwig was writing an adaptation of Little Women. And Saoirse Ronan was like, I'm Jo.
Yeah. And she's like, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. And Greta Gerwig is like, I don't know. And Saoirse Ronan's like, no, I'm Jo. And then shortly thereafter, Greta Gerwig realized that casting yourself in the role was like the most Jo thing to do, and so she was like, Saoirse is Jo.
I thought that Adam Driver's in some Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, well, Adam Driver and Greta Gerwig, I love when they act opposite each other. Yeah. They were both in Francis Ha.
That's what I was about to say. I couldn't remember if they were in that together.
And they have really good like chemistry working together, I think. And so I like that she and Noah Baumbach like pass actors back and forth too, because that's just really funny to me.
Yeah.
During filming of the Bookbinding scene, this is probably my overall favorite fun fact, just so you guys know. During the filming of the Bookbinding scene, Greta Gerwig wanted there to be music playing to help Ronan feel the right emotions of the moment. And so she gave Saoirse Ronan a list of songs to choose from. And Saoirse Ronan picked the song, which was Greta Gerwig's first choice as well. And the song was Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie. So that's what's blaring through the speakers during the filming of the Bookbinding scene. Like, I want to watch that scene with that song playing and, like, see if, like, you can figure out based on Saoirse Ronan. Why do I keep doing this?
Their names are both really weird enough that, like, you can mix them up.
Right. I just want to see if, like, you can figure out based on her face, like, which part of the song is playing. Yeah. You know? It's just, that's of
all
the songs.
She's, like, singing along, like, if you can tell.
It just, like, that's of all the songs. Yeah. Like, that's a song that if it comes on shuffle in the car, my mom's like, turn that off. And so I just love, I'm like, this was the Bookbinding scene from Little Women. Like, that makes it more dignified.
Yeah.
Amy's now famous speech to Laurie about the realities of marriage for a woman was a last minute addition to the script. It was actually Meryl Streep who suggested to Greta Gerwig that there should be a moment to drive home to modern audiences the true powerlessness of women in this time period.
Mm-hmm.
So Greta Gerwig wrote that speech and gave it to Florence Pugh just a few moments before the filming of the scene, and it was just scrawled on a random piece of scratch paper.
Incredible talent. We love Florence Pugh. She's incredible.
And Greta Gerwig. Well, like, the fact that she wrote that.
That too,
like,
absolutely. But, you know.
Yeah, but Florence Pugh.
The performance-wise was great.
And that's something to know, that Florence Pugh didn't have time to, like, prep that monologue. Yeah. Like, she was just handed it and they were like, all right, we're filming this scene. Like, that's really impressive.
It is. It's great.
Greta Gerwig was pregnant with her son Harold while filming this movie, but hid it from everyone on set. So she dressed in increasingly baggier clothes to hide her pregnancy, and she actually went into labor within 48 hours of turning in the rough cut of this movie.
Wow. A queen. A true... Like, this movie just embodies, like, women empowerment. Like, I'm just saying women.
Women.
Like, not even little,
you guys,
just women.
You guys can't see it, but we're doing the Charcheronan gesture where she's like, I just... Women.
That's it.
I love that meme. But yeah, one thing that's so interesting about that fact to me, though, is I just wonder, like, do you think Saoirse Ronan and, like, Timothée Chalamet were, like, offended?
That they didn't know?
Because, like, I just feel like it'd be like, if I was pregnant and didn't tell you, Sarah.
I would be hurt.
Yeah, like, I feel like, because I feel like they're friends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think they are, because they seem pretty close.
Yeah.
I would
and
be hurt.
So, like, that's just...
But to repay... I would say to repay them, I would name my child after them.
But she named that child Harold.
Ooh.
His name is Harold.
Ooh.
Which, well, I really appreciate because Saoirse Ronan has talked. I'm doing it. This is awful, you guys. I know who Greta Gerwig is and I know who Saoirse Ronan is.
It's okay.
It's just because I stan them both so fully.
It's okay.
But Greta Gerwig has talked in interviews about how she really loves that her son's name is Harold, because right now as an infant he looks like an old man, so he looks like a Harold. Then she's like, there'll be like a 60-year window where he won't look like a Harold, but he'll grow back into looking like a Harold eventually.
That is true. I mean, I thought about that before when I meet like a kid that's got like a really like old sounding name. I'm like, oh, you know, but when they get older,
yeah,
it's just gonna be their name. Like, it's gonna seem normal. So yeah.
That's
Harold.
Harold. I love that for her.
Interesting.
And my final fun fact, which is a very Kyla brand fun fact, Tracy Letts plays Mr. Dashwood in this film, and he's also in Lady Bird, which was Greta Gerwig's directorial debut. I paused to make sure I didn't interchange their names there.
You gotta make sure you have it clear.
But he plays Larry McPherson, which is Lady Bird's father, in Lady Bird, and Tracy Letts is the son of novelist Billy Letts, who wrote Where the Heart Is.
She's always got to bring it back to Natalie Portman.
I have to.
I know there's another little fact or something that's going to bring it back.
Oh, it's that the actor who plays Friedrich was in Planetarium acting opposite both Lily Rose Depp and Natalie Portman.
Lily Rose Depp dated Timothée Chalamet.
For those of you who don't know.
For those of you who don't know.
For those of you
They've broken up, but that's, you know.
For those of you who aren't forced to be aware of every detail of Timothée Chalamet's personal life, unlike me.
I mean, that one just kind of, I saw it on Twitter, so that's how I found out. But yeah, no, it's interesting that they were in the same movie, though, together, and they, like, he also worked with Lily Rose Depp. Because, like, I wonder, like, I don't think they were dating when he was working with Little Women, like, when he was on that movie. Like, were they dating at that point?
I think so.
Because if they were, I wonder if they, like,
that's what
out.
I wonder if they all, like, yeah.
Because, like, he knows Little Rose
Depp,
and he knows Timothée Chalamet. I wonder if they, like, hung out.
Yeah. I think, I could be wrong.
I don't know
the timeline.
I don't know
of Timothée Chalamet's personal life.
I shouldn't know that, actually.
But I think he was dating Lily Rose Depp while filming this.
They've been dating for a while.
They dated for a while.
Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Was Florence Pugh dating Zach Braff during the filming
of
this movie?
I don't even want to know. He's so old. How old is he?
He's 44 or 45.
And
I don't know if his birthday.
She's 1 year older.
She's 1 year older than me, yeah.
Yikes. That's just yikes.
Hey, it lets me know I have a chance with Zach Braff.
Ew, No.
Been in love with him since seeing Garden State, okay?
That's another way to connect it back to Natalie Portman.
I didn't do it. You did. All right.
Said Garden State.
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean we have to say Natalie Portman.
You also said Where the Heart Is and Planetarium.
It's true. Let's see how many I can drop by the end of this conversation, okay?
No.
We're up to three.
No.
All right, so let's start our Little Women discussion with the question I always ask, which is, like, what's your experience with this film like, Sarah? Can you talk about the first time you saw it and how many times you think you've seen it since?
I watched it on Christmas Eve, and I made my mom go see it, and it was like a crappy theater. It was like in Chattanooga. I was in Tennessee.
Just name drop the theater right now. Tell everyone which theater you hate.
I don't know which theater it was, but it was like a really crappy one because, like, the audio was terrible. Like, there was points in the movie I didn't know what they said. I was like, what did he just say? What did she? Because it was really, the audio is already quiet with the movie anyways, because after I've seen it four times, I haven't mentioned that yet, but in theaters. And so
in theaters,
which is, like, very rare for me. But for the first time I watched it, there was, like, the audio was very bad. And then also I was super confused because I never read the book. This is like just giving background. Never read the book. Never watched any of the other movies. The only thing I knew going in was that he didn't end up with Joe, because I wanted to prepare my heart that Timothy Chalamet was not going to be with Saoirse Ronan by the end of the movie. So
they're
I told
never
myself
with each other. At the
I know,
end of the
I know, and they did that on purpose. But like, it's fine, it's fine. And so I prepared myself for that. That's the only thing I knew, really. I mean, like, I knew some like little details, but I didn't know enough to know like the ages of the sisters, like to know who was who and what was what, you know what I mean? I didn't know any of that. So the second time I watched it, got a little bit better, because I got like, I watched it with you the second time. Mm-hmm. And Kyla told me ahead of time, like, those are flashback scenes and this is not a flashback scene. You know what I mean? She helped me understand ages and timeline. Like, it helped better when I watched it with Kyla, because she has a better understanding, because she's seen all the other movies and read the book and whatever. And so she helped me with that. And then the third and fourth time was just kind of like for funsies, and just to like fully understand
for
funsies, and to fully understand like the, like, you know what I mean, to like get my actual like opinion on it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the first two times I was confused, I had no idea what was going on. The last two times I like really understood and really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So but yeah, the first time didn't really care for it, second time you helped me like with like the details, then third and fourth I enjoyed it. So yeah, that's my sorry, that was a really long experience.
No, you're
that's
good.
My experience.
I was telling Sarah before we started recording, I really wish that I could scroll back in our texts to Christmas Day last year, because Sarah saw it on Christmas Eve. I think I saw it on Christmas Day. I don't think I saw it
I
on
may
Christmas
have saw
Eve.
It on Christmas Day. I don't remember. It was either but, Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
But I know we had both seen it by Christmas. Yeah, because we texted it. Each other our reactions. And I'm like, there's no, like, no chance I could ever find those texts again, because
yeah,
that
no.
was so long
no,
ago.
No, there's no way.
But I wish that I could have get our raw reactions, yeah. Because I know, I feel like one of us took a controversial stance
it was,
on
it
Amy.
It was definitely me. It
yeah,
was me.
You,
because I remember not liking her at all the first time watching it, and then I didn't really like any, I mean, like, I liked Timothy Chalamet, obviously, and I liked Saoirse Ronan, but I didn't like, I don't know. I had a lot of issues with the movie the first time I watched it.
My first time watching it, which I'll give you guys the rundown on my experience in just a moment, because it's a really funny story that everyone needs to hear. But I didn't really like Timothy Chalamet's performance that much
either.
The first time around. No, I've always thought his performance in the confession scene where he's telling Joe that he's in love with her, mm-hmm. I've always thought his performance in that scene is good. Mm-hmm. But he always is a very natural actor to me, but mm-hmm. a lot of his things feel forced. A lot of his line deliveries mm-hmm. feel forced in this movie, mm-hmm. especially in his first scene. In his first scene where he runs into Amy, when he's like, Amy!
Yeah,
like the
oh
way,
my gosh.
Like it just,
I roasted him hardcore the first time watching it. I did not like him.
It just, he's like, I didn't recognize you because you've yeah. gotten so beautiful. Like yeah. it all just,
it felt fake.
And it's not like, I don't think it's Greta Gerwig's writing. Like,
no.
I think it was Timothy Chalamet's delivery.
I think so too.
And I would not have been aware of it or found mm-hmm. an issue with it if Sarah hadn't have forced me to watch so many Timothy Chalamet interviews.
Yeah.
But because I know what he's like in life now, mm-hmm. when I see him perform, I'm struck by.
But
if it
and
comes
I made you watch
as
other movies too, and he's better
yeah.
in other roles. It just, I think it depends on what the role is. I didn't like him in yeah. The King either. So it may just be like historical things. I don't know. Yeah. But I just did not. I don't know. And okay. this one, he just didn't do very good.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about all of the specific performances in just a moment, but I will tell you guys a little bit about my experience, which is I have this little cousin, Mary Bella. If you're a really faithful listener to the show, then you've met her, because she was on for my episode when I discussed The Wizard of Oz. Because she really wanted to talk about that movie, so I brought her on and she talked about it. But Mary Bella, she is about to be 11, so she's 10. And so last Christmas, like around Christmas time, she kept asking me if I would take her to see Little Women. And she's never asked me to take her to see a movie that wasn't a Disney movie before, you know? And so I was like, yeah, I'll take you to see Little Women. Like, yeah, this is great. And I was like, I wonder why Mary Bella wants to go see
why
Little Women.
So interested in
yeah, because like she literally would bring it up every time she saw me. She'd be like, you're going to take me to see Little Women, right? And I was like, yeah, I'll take you to see Little Women. And I was, like, really happy because growing up, her mom always took me to see mm-hmm. movies. And so I was like, this is going to be a great bonding experience. And the whole family started being like, why does Mary Bella want to see Little Women? So it got to the point where it became, like, a family outing.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was going to go see Little Women because we all wanted to know, like, we assumed maybe she had heard about the book and, like, felt interested in it.
Maybe she read the book at school or heard about it at school. That's what and my so, first impression was.
So, we take Mary Bella to see Little Women on Christmas Day, and it's me and her mother and her grandmother. Like, it has turned into, like, a whole thing. And we get in there, and we sit down. We drove to another town because our town doesn't have the nicest theater. So, like, we were like, we're going to go see this in a nice theater.
Garbage.
So, we went to an adjacent town for a better theater. We get in there. Like, this is, we planned our Christmas day around taking Mary Bella to see this movie. We sit down. Movie starts rolling. Few moments in, Mary Bella gasps and goes, "They're not midgets."
No.
And I was like, what? No. And she was like, Sumner told me they were actual Little Women.
No.
And so Sumner is her older brother who clearly wanted to just get her out of the house for a day. And so he really hyped it up to her. He's like, yeah, it's going to be this crazy movie. It's going to be all these Little Women.
Oh, Lord.
And so she fully thought we were going to see a movie about actual Little Women.
Yeah.
And she was very disappointed. And very confused the entire movie.
I was going to say, probably bored,
like,
too.
Yeah.
I can see her not really caring for it.
Yeah, it's a pretty long movie.
When I say it's for all ages, I mean, probably like 12 and up, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 12's pushing it a little bit.
It, like, depends on the kid, though. Yeah. I could have watched that through this at 10 enjoyed it.
I probably would not.
But then, so Mary Bella's loud musings within the theater didn't end with her being like, these aren't midgets. Like, she continued to have revelations throughout the movie. So the first time Meg is on screen, she goes, oh! And I'm like, yeah, it's Hermione. And she goes, no, that's Belle. And I was floored. I was like, I'm disowning you. I'm not related to you. The fact that you most strongly associate Emma Watson with Beauty and the Beast and not Harry Potter, like, that is a problem. Yeah,
no,
I was like,
sorry.
So that one bothered me. And then later, Sarah's already talked about the structure of this film, which is something we're going to go into in just a little while. But the way it jumps back and forth from a present timeline to a past timeline very much confused the 10-year-old Mary Bella. And so there's the scene where Beth dies, and then the very next shot is Joe looking out a window at a young Beth who's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see Beth alive, Mary Bella goes, what? I thought she was dead! Like, really loudly. And, like, it's a full theater.
Yeah.
It's Christmas Day. Like, it's packed
before
out.
COVID.
Yeah.
We have to give warnings
and
before
so,
COVID.
So, I just, my first time viewing this film, I was much more entertained by Mary Bella than even the film itself, I think. But I really enjoyed the movie the first time seeing it. The second time seeing it, I saw it with Sarah, and I had a lot of revelations about the structure and the color grading and I really felt like I was able to appreciate Greta Gerwig's artistic vision the second time around.
That's how I felt, too. Like, maybe the third time for me, I was really able to, like, appreciate it. And I showed it to friends who hadn't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, like, made me more excited to watch it. Because then I could be like, oh, wait for this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrible about that. I'm like, oh, I love this scene, you know? But, yeah, so.
And then I saw the movie for a third time in theaters at the end of January of this year. Because I wanted my mom to see it. And so I convinced her to go see it with me on a weekend where I went and visited her, and we went and saw it, and I have a little bit of a sentimental connection to this movie because it's the last movie I saw in theaters, which is strange for me. Usually I see multiple movies each month, but I know why I didn't see a movie in theaters in February. It's because I was doing my Natalie Portman watch all of February. I watched her entire filmography beginning to end, and so I didn't have time to go see any movies. So that's why I didn't see any in February, and then the shutdown.
Yeah.
And so the last movie I saw in theaters was Little Women.
Not for me. I saw Gretel and Hansel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, and then I just watched it today for this episode. So I've seen Little Women 4 times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Sarah, now we need to each give our pit and peak of this film. So what's your least favorite aspect and what's your favorite aspect of this movie?
So my least favorite is probably, it's kind of like they're both in the same, like, span of like 10 minutes, but I think, well, yeah, okay, I'll say that. My least favorite is when Jo is, like, really upset that she missed that opportunity with Laurie, and she's like, but I'm so lonely and all this stuff, and, like, is really regretting not being, but then my peak of the film is when Laura Dern's character, Marmee, is giving this whole monologue to her, telling her, like, you don't need him, you know?
You don't need him.
You say it better. No,
she
says, you know exactly how
she asks her, do you love him? Mm-hmm. And Joe says that she thinks she could, like, she thinks she could marry him. And she says, if he asked me again, I'd say yes. And Marmee says, but do you love him? And Joe says, I care more to be loved.
Yeah.
And Marmee says, that is not the same as loving.
No, it's not. And so that was my pit and peak, because I was like, man, Laura Dern's incredible. I was like, that's so great.
So Laura Dern is your peak, is what I'm getting.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. Because, like, she didn't talk at all during the movie until, like, that. I mean, she talked, but, like, she didn't really get, like, her moment to shine until that point, in my opinion.
This is probably going to be a hot take. I don't know if I've said this to you before, Sarah, about this movie, but I... I'm not being blasphemous. I love Laura Dern. Like, I love Laura Dern. Renata Klein is the greatest television character to ever exist. Like, I love Laura Dern. I'm listen to the entirety of this statement before everyone jumps on me, okay? I don't love all of her performances, Marmee. She comes across as really one note in certain scenes and a little too saccharine in certain scenes for me. But there are two scenes where she is alone with Joe where Laura Dern's performance is so great. Like, it takes me aback. And it's the first scene where she's alone with Joe when she's telling Joe that she was like Joe when she was young.
Yeah, that was sweet.
And then the scene where Joe is confiding that she's so lonely with the infamous women monologue. But I think that Laura Dern's performance... overall, I enjoy it, but there are moments, like the moment where she's talking to Laurie and she's like, call me Marmee, everyone else does. Like, it just feels like Timothy Chalamet.
Disingenuous.
It feels rehearsed.
it doesn't
feel natural.
No, I agree. I have issues with every single one of them, I think, except for maybe Joe. And even Joe, I may have.
Saoirse Ronan comes across as pretty natural the whole time for me.
But the rest of them, I do have my, like, things about each one of them that I did not like. And that is one of them. I agree with you with Laura Dern. She just, there's moments from, like,
Timothy Laura Dern.
I really roasted him the entire time. You know I did.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
We love you, Laura Dern. Like, absolutely, you deserved your Oscar last
year. Yes, absolutely.
But
we stand a queen.
This performance, like I said, it just feels a little too saccharine at certain moments.
It did.
My pit is... I have three. And then I also have multiple peaks, which I think this is the first film ever on this podcast that I've ever had multiples for both, but I just really can't... I think every time I've watched it, I've had a different one, and I can remember them all because they're also recent in my mind. But my first pit, which is the first pit I thought of when trying to come up with one, is when John Brooke looks at Meg. It's that the entirety of that scene, honestly, where Meg is apologizing for having bought the fabric, and, like, he can't even find it in himself to be angry with her. He's just like, well, I suppose $50 isn't too much of an expense for a new dress with all the trappings it takes to finish it these days. And she's like, well, it's not a dress yet. It's just the fabric. And it just, like, I don't know, something about that scene just breaks my heart. Their whole little arc is very sad to me.
It
has a nice resolution. I do enjoy, but the moment that is my pit is when he looks at her and says, I really am very sorry you've had to do without so many beautiful things and that you're married to someone who can't give them to you.
Yeah.
That's
sad.
Because Meg, here's my thing, and I'm going to talk much more in depth about Meg in a little bit when we get to her character specifically, but I'm not begrudging Meg for her characterization at all. Like, and I like that the movie doesn't do that. I don't feel like the movie is being patronizing or punishing to Meg. Like, it's treated as valid that she has some insecurities where, like, she wants to have nice things. Like, that's a very natural desire for a woman to have. But something about the fact that John Brooke, like I said, can't even find it within himself to be angry with her. Like, that's heartbreaking because it lets you know that he's just as insecure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's a pit for me. And then another one is when Aunt March is telling Amy that she has to marry well.
Oh, yeah.
That scene's just a pit for me when she's, like, saying, you know, Joe is, you know, gonna go off and do her thing, and Meg's had her head turned by a penniless tutor, and so you have
and Beth dies.
Sorry, she, Beth. She's like, but you, so you have to, someone has to provide for this family.
Yeah, for the family.
And
which is unfair. We'll
circle back to that and Amy's responsibility, the responsibilities that have been heaped onto Amy's shoulders when we talk about Amy in just a moment. So that's a pit for me. And then this is the one that probably gutted me most the first time watching this movie in theaters. Just the moment of Marmee sobbing alone at the table when runs down and Marmee's just, and so, and then Joe approaches her and she's just like clutching like at Joe's like dress skirt and sobbing.
That
like,
was really sad.
That's a big pit.
I forgot about that one. That's sad.
And then my peaks, I love the conversation between Joe and Meg on Meg's wedding day. Mm-hmm. That might be my favorite bit of dialogue in the whole movie. I love both lines. I love Joe saying, "You will be bored of him in 2 years, and we will be interesting for the rest of our lives." And Meg's response, though, is just as perfect. She says, "Just because my dreams are different from yours doesn't mean they're unimportant."
Yeah.
And that circles back to, like, this movie is not patronizing or punishing to any of the women characters.
Not. Yeah.
Like, it treats all of their desires like they're valid because they are.
Yeah.
And so the fact that Meg wants something different out of life than Joe doesn't make Meg less of a woman.
Yeah.
It's just that Meg's desires are different. Her dreams are different. Yeah. But that doesn't make them unimportant. Yeah. And so I love that. But I still love Joe's. You'll be bored of him in 2 years and we will be interesting for the rest of our lives. Because, like, that's... is she wrong?
No, she's not wrong. She is definitely not, but it's okay.
And then both... I've already mentioned, but both of Joe's private conversations with Marmee are peaks for me. And I'll talk more about those when we talk about our favorite lines. And then another peak is the resolution of Meg and Mr. Brooks' arc when she says, he's saying, you know, "I'm really sorry that you're that you've been unhappy." And she says, "I couldn't be. John Brooke is my husband and I am his wife."
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that's just, it's the perfect resolution to that whole storyline.
Yeah.
You know, that Meg realizes that as long as she has him, like, material things don't matter.
They don't matter.
That's her true happiness. And that's kind of like the essence of what she's telling Joe, you know, is that her dream is him.
Yeah.
It's not things.
Yeah.
So those are that's my pits and my peaks. Sorry that I had three of each, but I couldn't whittle that down. Now we're going to go through and talk about, like, each character and the portrayals of the actors that are playing them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to note as we jump into this that's very interesting to me is that Little Women is, like, a distinctly American novel, and, like, it's such a American story. It's just very interesting to me that of the young main cast, none of them are 100% American. Because you have, Saoirse Ronan was born in New York, but she was raised in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, both of her parents are Irish.
Yeah.
Timothée Chalamet's father is French.
Yeah.
He was raised here, but does he have French citizenship?
I think so.
I think he does.
I think so, too, because that would make sense.
Eliza Scanlon is Australian.
Mm-hmm.
And
obviously Watson.
Emma Watson and Florence Pugh are both British.
Yeah.
So it's just very interesting to me. If you've listened to previous episodes, like, I talked about that in my Jackie episode. Like, Jackie is such an American story, but almost everyone creatively involved in it was not American.
Yeah.
So it's just, I feel like that it's almost a good thing when that happens, when distinctly American stories are told by non-American voices, because it allows us to strip the story bare a little bit. Like,
see it in a
you don't
light.
Have to treat it with kid gloves or like with a special degree of reverence. Like, you can just kind of, like, approach it as any other narrative, you know? So let's start with, I mean, when you have this cast, I feel like you have to start with Meryl Streep. So let's start with Aunt March. What are your feelings about Aunt March?
First time watching it, I was like, what's her deal? You know, I was like, why is she so, like, snippy? But then, like, the second time watching it, I was like, okay, I love her. And I mean, I loved her in the first one too. Like, the first time I watched it, I liked her because I love Meryl Streep. But I was kind of like, okay, you know, and the dog where she's sleeping.
The dog.
She's got the dog. That was really funny. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know, because again, I didn't know anything really about the story. So I was like, okay. But she was kind of like, I don't know, snippy and, you know, but I like how the girls kind of poke fun at that in the movie. You know, they, like, kind of make jokes about how she's, like, you know, super intense and things like that, especially at Meg's wedding too, where they're, like, walking with her and stuff. Yeah.
I love Meg being like, well, I couldn't be more unhappy than someone alone in a big house.
Yeah.
Like, because it's kind of the first time Meg is the one to smart off.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, like, we've heard Joe and Amy roast her, but for it to be Meg, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that it's really interesting to me. I mean, I feel like Aunt March, there's this trend, right, in period pieces where it's like if there's like a bit part where it's like a stately, matronly woman, like it needs to be played by a huge name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm thinking of Lady Catherine in Pride and Prejudice. Like there's always, you know what I mean? It has to be a big name that plays that stately, matronly character. And so, you know, it's Judi Dench in the 2005 version. So Aunt March, you need a big name. It's still crazy to me, though, that Meryl Streep played this role because it is such a minor part. And I'm not saying that Meryl Streep doesn't do minor parts, but
I'm not all that surprised. I don't know. Because, like, when you get presented this kind of, I feel like she would be like, oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, I could see her being, yes.
She's like, yeah, I can eat some Wendy's French fries with some really happening young people.
Yes. You got to put a link to that photo in the description, too, because that's funny. But, yeah, no, I feel like she's chill enough that she, like, really. Now, if it were someone else, I feel like they may not have been as, yeah, let's do it. But, you know, Meryl Streep's very, like, chill and, like, it's Greta Gerwig directing. I feel like
I've read before that that's what really enticed her was like working with a female director on this story.
Female director, really.
I think too that it gave her the opportunity to show off her comedic timing, which is not something that she gets in every role necessarily.
Yeah.
Like when we think of Meryl Streep, we don't automatically associate her with comedic roles.
No,
but like I'm thinking of like the but I'm rich line. Like that got such a big laugh in the theater every time I saw it, and I think. It allowed her to flex a muscle that she doesn't necessarily get to flex in all of her roles.
Yeah.
I don't, though, this, again, not to be controversial on Maine, I don't know that she does enough with the role for it to feel like a Meryl Streep performance.
Yeah, no, it didn't have an impact on me. When I, like, I didn't really think of her. Like, when we were talking about doing the podcast, we were talking about the people in the cast and things. I really forgot about it. I feel so bad because I love Meryl Streep, but I literally forgot about her. And then when you said it, I was like, wait. And I was like, oh, wait. Oops.
Yes,
I literally.
Meryl Streep is in this movie.
Yeah, it took me like a few minutes to like realize that she was actually in the movie. And I was like, oops. But yeah, like she didn't impact me enough to like really
Which
care.
Is just something that doesn't happen with Meryl Streep.
No, not at all. But I mean, I still like her.
I'm so glad she did.
Yeah, me too. But like, it wasn't impactful.
I will say though, you know, you brought up Meg's wedding. My favorite moment with Aunt March in this movie, I think, is the moment between her and Marmee when Marmee is walking her away from Meg's wedding. And Marmee's like, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because again, that goes back to the central like trend of this movie, which I feel like is treating all of the female characters like they're valid.
Yeah.
And like even.
And it enforces it too.
Even Aunt March, like who can seem kind of like cruel.
Yeah.
Like they're even like, she's not even wrong.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like her opinions matter too.
And, but I like that moment. That's one of the acting moments with Laura Dern that I actually really enjoy.
Yeah.
Is when she's, like, smiling, but she's like, yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the next character that I feel like we have to discuss, which is Laura Dern as Marmee.
Yeah. I don't really know. It's kind of the same. Like, a lot of these characters didn't, like, the main four girls are the main ones that had a big impact on me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, and I hate, like, being like, sure, sure, dude, you know, but it's Joe. Like, it's like what I like wanted to see. You know what I mean? I want to see those like, and I'm not saying that all the girls are not, you know, great, but like, you know, I wanted to see that kind of role like played out, you know, in front of me. And obviously Little Women is already like this wasn't anything new, but you know, I've never seen anything before, so it was new to me. And so, but yeah, like I feel like most of the roles were not that impactful for me, except for the main girls, but I still like Laura Dern. But there's only like a few scenes that I really like were impacted by her. Like
mm-hmm.
the scene with Joe at the end that I was talking about was my pit and peak. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorites. And she has like a few one-liners that I thought were funny. But like besides that, she's just kind of in the background.
Yeah.
Like she's not really there for much.
I really like on the subject of her one-liners, because I did not write this one down for favorite lines, but I really like her one-liner where the father is like, maybe I'll go out west after Friedrich has been like, yeah, they're kinder to immigrants out there. And Marmee goes, well, you're not an immigrant, so maybe you should stay home.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
That one just, it's Laura Dern's face as she says it. There are quite a few lines that I feel like it's not that on paper they're that funny.
Yeah.
It's how they sell the delivery. Yeah. So that one worked. One moment I wanted to mention about Marmee before we move on, though, is I do really like the moment with her when she's giving people the, like, things to take with them if they're going to travel to visit loved ones who yeah. are, like, in infirmaries.
And when she visits the family that kills Beth.
The family that kills Beth, that the gives Hummels. Her the disease, the that Hummels. Kills Beth,
yes, them.
The Hummels.
When she visits them, that was sweet too. I like that.
But when she, there's a moment where, first of all, there's a moment where she's talking to a woman of color and she's like, this is the first, she's talking about like having pride in her country. And the woman of color is like, well, not to step on your toes, but like maybe there's still things that your country needs to fix. And Marmee's like, oh, I'm aware of that. And then a gentleman comes in who his, he's had multiple sons like die for the Union Army, and he Marmee's gonna give him a blanket, and she like tries to inconspicuously take off her scarf to give the scarf to the man too, and that's a moment that is played out entirely on Laura Dern's face. Like there's no real dialogue to it, but it's a really powerful, poignant moment.
Yeah,
definitely. So I like that one a lot. Next, I have the man of the hour for you, Sarah.
Yes,
Timothy Chalamet as Theodore Laurie Lawrence.
When I came into the theater, I didn't know what his name was. I thought, watching the movie, like, I didn't know, I just knew that he didn't end up with Saoirse Ronan. That's all I knew. I literally knew nothing. And so, I was like, why are they saying Laurie? Or, like, I kept, because my mom's name is Laurie, and I was like, are they saying Laurie or, like, Laurie? Like, what are they saying? It took me, but again, the audio was really bad the first time I watched it.
It would be kind of confusing, though, because Joe calls him Teddy.
Yeah, they kept calling him, like, weird stuff, and so I never knew what his name was until, like, the third time watching it, I finally figured it out. But, like, I was really confused the first time watching it. I was like, what the heck is this guy's name? But I Googled it. I was like, I guess it is. But they, like, even on Google, I think it has. No, it just says Laurie on Google, I'm pretty sure. But I was, like, so confused because I was like, why? I thought his name was Lawrence. But then I was like, no, but then his name's, you know, Theodore. Yeah, uh-huh. And they're calling him Teddy. And I was so confused. Oh, my gosh.
You, Sarah, are reminding me so strongly of the episode of Friends.
Oh, no.
Where Joey reads Little Women for the first time. And not going to spend too long on this, but Greta Gerwig has said that her favorite thing about this movie, making this movie, is she's like, people are finally going to know more about Little Women than the Friends episode.
Yep, there you go.
Because
I haven't seen the Friends
Joey and Rachel trade favorite books, and they read them, and her favorite book is Little Women.
That's funny. So
he's reading it, and he's like, he says something about Joe being a boy. And first of all, when he first is going to read the book, he's like, these little women, Rach. How little are they?
like very Bella.
Scary little. And then his favorite book is The Shining. So Rachel has read The Shining.
Okay.
That
sounds like something me and you would do.
It does.
We would swap.
But
them.
So he says something about Joe being a boy, and Chandler's like, Joe's a girl, and he goes, no, because Joe's in love with Laurie. And then he's like, oh, and Chandler's like, no. Laurie's a boy.
Yeah,
Laurie's first name is Theodore, and that's what I feel like.
That was me going into the movie theater. I was like, what is this guy's name? I'm like, what is happening? Well, I didn't say this guy. I said, what is Timothy Chalamet's name? I was so confused, but I was like, why do they keep calling him that? And I wasn't sitting next to my mom. My friend was in between both of us, and so I could not, like, I was gonna whisper to my mom, what's his name? But my mom was, like, not paying attention. She was, like, really watching the movie. And I was like, okay, I'll just, I need to find my mom's in my, like, our text, because I was texting her during the movie. I was like, what's his name? I was trying to, like, I didn't know what they were
what's
saying.
What's his name?
It's so funny. But yeah, no, I love Timothy Chalamet, but yike, he did not do great in this one, in my opinion, because I remember saying that, like, the first time watching it, I roasted him the entire time.
It feels rehearsed.
Well, he just, I don't know what it is. He just looked weird to me.
It
I don't
also,
know.
In certain scenes, feels like he's putting on a little bit of an accent.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In his first scene with Amy,
I said that too, because they all, like, accidentally let their accent slip, but it sounds like he's, like, doing it to be, like, I don't know if he's
it sounds like
funny,
he's trying to sound, like, 19th century dignified.
Yeah, you know? But it's like, if you're gonna do that, do it the entire time.
Exactly.
Don't do it in bits and pieces, you know?
I will say, though, to his credit, his not like, it's not that his only good scene is the scene where he confesses his love for Joe. I really love the scene where he's drunk at the party.
Yes, that was good.
And, his acting in that is really good. Also, one of my favorite moments is maybe his little spin he does. Yeah. When he's like, Fred Vaughn, ladies and gentlemen. And then he, like, turns on his heels.
And, oh, and when they're in when they have the meeting with all the girls and he comes out and he goes, yeah. I like that. And then I like when him and Joe are dancing outside and you can watch through the windows. I really like that.
I think that Timothée Chalamet's best work in this movie is his chemistry with Saoirse Ronan.
And I was like, going to say, when they kind of, not when they catch him off guard necessarily, but when he's being a little more natural, you know, like there's, you can tell when it's like not like with the ninja thing, like when they're playing ninja, it's very like natural, you know, it's not something that looks like it's been rehearsed.
And that's, I think that, like, that's to the credit of Greta Gerwig's direction, she allowed them to just kind of like play with things,
because
like
be themselves.
The scene like where they're dancing with the night they first meet, like, that doesn't feel rehearsed choreographed at all. I feel like Greta Gerwig was like, all right, just have fun, act like idiots, and they did. And like the playing ninja, I don't think Greta Gerwig was like, play ninja, because that's anachronistic. Yeah. I think that Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet just did that, which is to the strength of the movie, because they come across as just like genuine best friends who are just behaving like kids.
They really do.
You know?
It makes them seem younger too, because at that point, I think they were younger, right?
Right.
Because they hadn't aged yet, so that like makes or maybe, was it a flashback?
Yeah, no, that's a flashback.
Yeah, so there
when
you
they're
go.
Playing ninja.
It makes them look
It's
younger.
When Meg is about to go off to the party.
Oh, yep.
Which is another...
That's another thing with Laurie.
Yeah, and that's another, like, pit and peak for me, is
me
that
too.
Scene.
I forgot about
I
that one,
I love
too.
It when she's like, dude, do you like how I look? And he's like, no.
Yeah, it's, that was crazy.
And
I remember that.
Okay, I'm going to take back what I just said about, I think he does really well when he's acting opposite Saoirse Ronan. I do think that Timothée Chalamet manages to have chemistry with every single person in this movie.
I think so, too. I think he just has those moments of, like, it's not natural. Because there's scenes with Amy that he's really good with, too.
Right.
And it just depends.
His scene with Meg comes across as so natural.
Yeah, and that was a good scene.
And the fact that he's able to have chemistry with Emma Watson, like, it's really it really drives home to me the central characterization of Laurie in this movie, which is that I think what Greta Gerwig was trying to present to us is not that he actually wanted to marry Joe, it's that he liked the sense of family he got from hanging out with the Marches.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily that he was like actually attracted to and in love with Joe. He was in love with the idea of family that Joe represented.
He didn't really have that family. He was stuck in like a schoolroom doing schoolwork.
Right.
All the time.
And all he had was his granddad, who was kind of cold and aloof and removed.
Yeah.
And so it's the idea of it's the March family that he loves.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily strictly Joe. So speaking of the March family, are we ready to move on to Beth?
Yes.
All right, Eliza Scanlon is Beth. What you got for me, Sarah?
See, the first time the first time I watched it, did not really care for it, if I'm being honest. Like, I liked the movie. I wanted to watch it another time, so there you go. Well, I was going to watch it with you anyways, and we made a promise that we would watch it together. So I was going to watch it anyways, but by the second and third time, I really liked it. But watching Beth, I was like, why is she here? I was like, she literally, I know that's so mean. I was like, she's not really adding any. I was like, what is like, because I didn't know that. You got to remember, I don't know anything going into this. So I was like, okay. I was sad when she died because I didn't know she was going to die. I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck? And so I like felt like because there was like mainly old people in the audience when I went, and I could like feel them like crying and like tearing up when Beth died. I was like, you people knew this was going to happen. I didn't. I was like, I'm not crying.
I need to tell you, the culmination of the Friends episode is that Joey and Rachel get mad at each other and they spoil the books for each other.
Oh, no.
And so Joey tells her what happens in The Shining, and she's like, and then she's like, Beth dies. And Joey's like, and like, it's so much worse.
That's so mean. I'm like, I literally did not know she's gonna. I was sad, like, don't get me wrong, but I didn't understand what, like, I don't know, it just I didn't get it at first. But then watching it like later on, I was like, oh, you know, like, her character made more sense to me as we, like, when we watched it together. And then when I watched it again, I liked her more. But at the beginning, I was just like, she's kind of boring. I was like, this is kind of plain. And then she like gets sick and then gets better and then gets sick again and then dies. And then Joe cuts all of her hair off. And I'm like, what is happening? I was so confused.
Joe cutting her hair off happens before she gets sick.
I know. Yeah. Because doesn't she sell her hair to get money for...
To get Marmy the ticket to go visit the
dad. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was so confused. I was like, what is happening?
I think that that's the point, is that Beth, like, what she adds... she's not as flashy as the others. She doesn't stand out as much, but that's like, she's like a quiet, she has a quiet dignity and a quiet strength. Yeah. You know?
Well, because I mean, I liked her, like, after I watched it, like, the second
She's the sweet one. She's the heart.
And I really liked when she's playing the piano, too. Mm-hmm. I liked that. And I liked how she went over there to the.
She went to visit the Hummels, and she. I had this conversation with my mom after we saw it together. I was like, so do you think that Joe, Amy, and Meg live with the guilt of thinking they basically killed Beth?
Because they sent her.
Because they wouldn't go. Yeah. They wouldn't go.
They said, I went last time, or I did this, I did that. Isn't that when Amy has her foot stuck in the bucket? And she's like, I'm not. There you go.
But I think I like the line that Amy has, though, where she says Beth was the best of us.
Yeah.
Because I feel
she's like the sweetest.
Beth gets looked over, but Beth really is the best of them. And I want to like give major props to Eliza Scanlon, because in most Little Women adaptations, Beth is such a non-entity in my mind. Like, in most Little Women adaptations.
Yeah, and this one, she, I mean, she, like, she stuck more than Meryl Streep did, because I remembered her. She, I actually remembered her before I remembered Amy. Like, I was thinking Florence Pugh, and I could not remember her name for the life of me. And I remembered Beth before I remembered Amy.
I think that, and that's one of the main strengths of this adaptation, is that all four of them, like, it's a true ensemble piece.
Equal.
But the fact that Beth actually makes an impact, because in every other adaptation, it's always like, Beth, you're just like, ah, Beth's the one that dies. Oh. Like, that's all she does.
Yeah.
But in this one, like, she has a personality. She has her dolls. She has some great funny lines. She she's also like the peacemaker. Yeah. Like, she's the one
in the wrestling. She's like, stop, guys.
Yeah, and like, she's the one consoling Joe. Like, obviously Meg is there too. But like, the fact that Beth, I don't know, like, she just has more to do in this one than I feel like she usually gets to do.
I was thinking of when Meg, whose hair did Meg burn off?
No, Joe burns Meg's hair.
Okay, I can't remember.
But it's Beth that like reacts hilariously the first time. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! And, she's
and
like,
then Joe starts screaming.
Yeah, she's like, ah!
And then I really love because Amy starts screaming too, and then Meg jumps up and Meg goes, "Marmy, I can't go. I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled." And like it's good.
I remember that. That was so funny.
So speaking of Meg screaming, "I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled." Next we have Emma Watson as Meg.
Emma Watson pulled another Perks of Being a Wallflower, where she didn't know which accent she should be doing. The Olive Garden. She didn't know what accent to have for this movie.
Sarah likes to just roast Emma Watson, and I'm an Emma Watson stan. Like, at one point in time, I would claim that my hierarchy of actresses went Natalie Portman, Olivia de Havilland, Audrey Hepburn, Emma Watson. It's not that bad anymore. Like, I've come to terms with the fact that Emma Watson, she does other things well.
Yeah.
Like, but she does, like, I don't think she's a bad actress. She gets a lot of flack. Like, people really try to come for her and say that she's not a good actress.
I like her in other stuff, but, like, there's the accent thing really did irritate me. I was like, what is she doing? Is she okay? The Olive Garden. It's just like that. I was like, girl, you okay? But, yeah. Other than that, though, I really do like Meg's character. I'm glad they picked Emma Watson over Emma Stone. I almost said the other way around, like Greta Gerwig and Saoirse Ronan. But I really did like Meg, because she's kind of like, I don't know. When I was first watching it, I was confused with the ages, you know, because everyone looks old, but they're supposed to be really young, and I was really confused, which it could be worse. They do play the young, like, they play childlike, you know.
Really well.
Really well, yeah. And so that didn't really, like, bother me after watching it a few more times, but I really like how Meg is kind of like you can tell, like, she's the older sister, you know, like, she's got that maternal type feel almost. Like,
when Marmy's not there, she's Marmy.
Yeah. And doesn't she, like, make food at one point and, like, has it out? Yeah.
Yeah. And she's the one, like, dictating jobs to them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's like, I got to go get the groceries. Yeah. Like, we're.
So I like that. I like that factor that she kind of holds it together, you know.
I think that, Meg, She's another one that's really undervalued in most adaptations, but in this one she gets a real moment to shine, and I love that she gets her own subplot. And I love, like, I've said a million times that, like, it's not like a condescending subplot. Like,
no, it's not.
It's not like it's wrong that she is insecure because of their financial status. Like, it allows the moment to kind of breathe, and it allows, like, there to be a natural and good resolution there. And I just feel like that's Meg, I feel like I can't think off the top of my head of another adaptation where it's like Meg is treated like a fully formed character.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's like Meg's just there.
From what I've
there.
Heard from you, like, and my mom too, with, like, the other movies, or the other adaptations of Little Women, is that it's mainly just Joe.
Yeah, it's always the Joe show.
Or the Joe show. And they're all, like, background 2020, the Joe show. It's all, like, background characters, like, the rest of them, you know? And so I really like this one. Like, being able to see it without all of that, I think it helped me, like it more. I don't know. I feel like I really like it because of, like, how they're all really equal. Like, their storylines are all in it, like, incorporated in the movie instead of just Joe.
Yeah. And speaking earlier about, like, how, like, there are certain lines that are made all the more comedic by the delivery, I think that Emma Watson really sells some of Meg's lines.
Yeah, like, she does.
Especially the awkwardness of her courtship with Mr. Brooke.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they really... I laugh so hard every time, and it's not even a comedic line, when she's like, I like him. He's kind.
Yes. Oh, my because gosh. That's so funny.
She makes, like, such a dreamy face, yes. And you're just like, wow. Like, this is smitten schoolgirl. Yeah. And, like, the fact that Emma Watson portrays it so convincingly.
That was so funny.
And that she, like, she just comes across as so sweet and wholesome the whole time.
She really does.
Which could have felt one note, but it feels genuine.
Yeah, it does. Know? Yeah.
So, all right, we got two left here. We got the big two. So, next is Florence Pugh as Amy.
Okay, so the controversial take from earlier, I did not like Amy. But I think it was because I wanted Joe and Laurie to be together so bad when I first... Because, I went in blind, so I didn't know. But I was, like, wanting them to be together so bad. I was like, no, you know, I hate Amy. I was like, what's her problem? And I didn't... My only other issue, like, when it comes to, like, I guess... the casting of Florence Pugh is that she looks a lot older, and I didn't know that Amy was supposed to be the youngest, so when I was told that Amy was, like, one of the... Is she the youngest?
Amy's the youngest.
I was like, she's, like, 10? She looks like she's 40.
In my head, though, even though I know that Amy's supposed to be the youngest, I always try to make Beth the youngest.
Me too.
I always want it to be Meg, Joe, Amy, Beth.
Me too. I literally thought that, because that's why I was like, who's the oldest? I was so confused because I was like, I don't know the ages. I was like, this is weird. So I had to Google it while watching the movie so I could, like, understand how old everyone was. But I was shocked that Amy was, like, the youngest one. I was like, really? But I do like Florence Pugh. After watching it the second time and getting over my feelings that Timothée Chalamet was not going to be with Joe or with Saoirse Ronan in the movie, I was like, okay, you know what? Let's move on. I was like, him and Amy are good together. You know, I really like Laurie and Amy. At first, I kind of was like, cringe because I was like, that's weird
it
to
is
go from sister
awkward,
to sister.
Yeah.
And also, I first time watching it, I was like, he just went from Joe to Meg to Joe to Amy, like, he went to all of them except for Beth, and I was like, that's weird. And so it bothered, but he didn't really go for Meg, he was just being like
he danced
a friend.
Yeah,
he wasn't limping. But, like, the first time watching it, I was like, man, this is kind of weird that he's
it's because he has convincing chemistry
he
with
does.
All of them, though. Like,
he's like
the
real
scene,
flirtatious
the
looking.
Scene with him and Meg, I don't think is meant to be, like,
romantic
at thing. All
yeah,
but, like, there's a little bit of, like, a sexual tension
yeah,
there, and you're
yeah.
like, Timothée Chalamet, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're like, why are you guys so, like, weird? What the heck? Yeah,
it's the way he cuts his eyes.
Yeah definitely, it's weird. I don't know, I just it didn't seem right in the first movie. I was like, why are they together? I was like, that's just so weird, because it's like, why would he, like, choose every single, like, sister? Like, if Joe turned you down, just move on, dude. Like, don't keep coming back. I'm like, that's weird.
I feel like, too, the assumption that Amy is third instead of the youngest. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the line she has where she's like, I've been second to Joe my whole life,
that adds to it, definitely.
Because it feels like she and Joe are next to each other in age.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Not that there's Beth in between them, but there is.
Definitely, yeah. I was always really confused, like, watching it the first two times, I was super confused with how, like she was supposed to be the, because it didn't make sense. Again, I thought Beth was the youngest, and with the lines that they delivered, it seemed like she was the youngest, but yeah, now watching it, you know, when you told me and everything, and I did more research, I was like, oh.
One thing I do want to say about Florence Pugh as Amy is, I think it's very interesting that you came in, like, without any, like, prior knowledge, like, having not read the book, having not seen the previous adaptations, and that you had, like, a little bit of a negative reaction to Amy, because I feel like, 99% of people who had read the book and seen other adaptations, like, they walked out of this version being like, Amy's now my favorite character. Like, everyone had a really positive reaction.
I liked
reaction
her after
to
watching
Amy.
It, like, the second and third time.
And I feel like it's because we had such low expectations for the role of Amy. Not that Florence Pugh didn't just knock it out of the park, because she did. But we all already knew, like, oh, yeah, Amy's going to burn the manuscript.
Oh,
yeah,
oh,
Amy's going to end up with Laurie. So, like, having those expectations helped us just, like, embrace this portrayal more.
Yeah.
But Florence Pugh does such a good job marking the transformation mm-hmm. of Amy, because Amy in the present timeline is so dignified and so mature.
Yeah, and like really mature. Like, and she's like changed yeah. drastically. And
she knows who she is. She knows what she wants out yeah. of life. Mm-hmm. And then, whereas the Amy in the flashbacks, like, I know, like, you're like, Florence Pugh doesn't look like a 10-year-old, but she acts like a 10-year-old.
Yeah, she acted like one hardcore.
The way she talks about her beautiful, delicate feet, yeah. the way mm-hmm. she antagonizes Joe.
Yeah.
I mean,
she like taunts her
when she's like, "You're gonna regret like, this, Joe March." Like, yeah. it's just
she's very childlike. But
she's very childlike, yeah. and she, I've got like multiple of her lines noted under favorite lines. So, like, yeah. I won't go into them all here, but like, she's just
she's really funny too. She's like the funniest one in my
she
opinion.
She is the funniest one, and she's the one I find myself every time. There's multiple moments where they're all talking over each other.
Yeah.
I pay attention to what Amy's
yes,
saying.
Yes, me too.
Because I'm like,
me
I know too. What Amy's saying is going to be
yes,
good.
Yes, I laugh every time so, like, when she delivers something.
I was so glad that Florence Pugh earned a Best Supporting Actress yes. nomination for this yes. because she absolutely
she
deserved
it.
The nomination.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, last but never least, Saoirse Ronan as Jo March.
I love Jo. Going into it, I knew that was going to be my favorite character. Leaving it, it was my favorite character in the first time. Second time, she was still my favorite, but Amy like really rose up there, I'm gonna say, because I really liked her. But yeah, I really like Saoirse Ronan in this role. She's very like, you get that independent vibe from her, and like she's like that in a lot of movies. She's very like independent on her own, and she's really good at that. So I really liked her in this role, and she's like, she's funny, but she can be really serious, and she can be really emotional, you know, because mm-hmm. at first you don't think she's emotional because she's very closed off, but at the end she becomes really emotional mm-hmm. when everything happens with Laurie. So, I mean, I like how she's very, like, versatile in that.
Yeah, I love what a nuanced portrayal of Jo this is. Like, yeah. she's not one note at all.
No,
and that,
definitely
that
not.
Happens in some adaptations, especially the, like, first couple of screen adaptations for Little Women, like mm-hmm. the one from the 30s. And the one from the 40s, like Jo comes across as just a spitfire. Yeah. And like, that's fine. That is a component of who Jo is as a character, but mm-hmm. that's not the totality.
No.
And Saoirse Ronan really dives into the vulnerability
yeah.
of Jo.
Oh, definitely.
I think that yeah. the first scene watching this the first time where I was like, oh, I'm like here for this portrayal of Jo, was the scene alone between her and Friedrich when he's like going through her writing and is telling her it's not good.
Yeah.
Like her reaction just felt so like raw.
Yeah.
That I was like, sure, Saoirse's really going for it. Like
yeah.
I really am
yeah.
here for this portrayal.
Yeah. That was really good.
And then of course, you know, the women that scene yeah. when she breaks down though and is like, I am so lonely, like she like they really lay bare the
yeah.
vulnerability of Jo and mm-hmm. the vulnerability of what it can be like to be an independent woman like that. Like,
yeah, especially in a family where you have a lot of sisters, but they're all, it seems like they're all getting, like, what they want, and you thought you knew what you wanted, but then when you get there, it's like, that's not what I want. You know what I mean? Like, she's having that realization of, like, I'm not where I want it to be. You know what I mean? But she is.
Right.
But in her head, she's thinking, like, I missed an opportunity. I should have taken it. But then her mom reminds her, like, no, you didn't miss
and
the opportunity.
And I love...
You were just going with your gut.
You know, I feel like we've already talked about Timothée Chalamet in the scene where Laurie confesses his feelings to
yeah.
Jo, and I feel like Timothée Chalamet gets a lot of attention for that scene, but Saoirse Ronan...
She really...
Holy cow.
That's, yeah.
When she's like, I've tried it, and I can't. I wish that I could feel these things for
yeah.
you, but like... That
it's
like
sister, how could you forget that at the end when you were like, I'm so
right.
lonely,
but,
I so
but it's
loved
because,
him.
But
like, it's like, no, you didn't, girl. You said you didn't.
But that's so like that happens in
yeah,
life, though.
It
you
does.
Convince yourself that you want something comfortable so
mm-hmm.
much that you it doesn't matter that it's not real. Like you'll take
yeah.
it because it's something to be had.
Yeah.
You know. And so I just like I Saoirse Ronan like she. Like, the fact that she, I think she does love Laurie, but she's not in love with him. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Like, she, loves him.
He's a kindred
not,
spirit.
Yeah.
He's someone that she...
Like a best friend kind of love.
And I
not.
Really, like, I noticed on this rewatch, I've never really paid attention to this line before, but right before Laurie confesses his feelings to her, what she says is she's like, shall we run away and join a pirate ship? And so, like, I like the notion that she's like, I would spend my life with Laurie.
Yeah.
Like, we could run away and do anything together, but I can't be with him
yeah.
because I can't make
myself
love him.
Yeah, I agree.
And so
and she delivers that very well.
Yeah,
you get that vibe.
So
the vibe she passes the
she
vibe.
Saoirse Ronan always passes the vibe.
Yeah,
I really she absolutely deserved the nomination
yeah,
for best
for
actress.
Sure. Yeah,
1,000%.
She's one of my favorites, definitely.
I also wanted us to note since we're talking about the cast right here. Since this is a Greta Gerwig movie that stars both Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet, it's their second movie like that. I wanted to ask you, like, do you think that Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet are a novel caliber of young actors? Like, do you think that this is... Because it's a strange thing for me, because they're only a couple years older than me.
Yeah.
I don't know that that I can point to examples of actors this young, of this high of caliber, that are two at the same time, that both of their careers, like, don't peter out at a certain point.
Well, it kind of reminds me of, like, a Leonardo DiCaprio, which I'm not saying that he's, the exact same, level as where he was in the 90s, but it kind of reminds me of that, where, like, Leonardo DiCaprio kept doing those, like, really big movies and, like, was, like, gaining a lot of fame, and he hasn't tapered. I mean, he's still in movies and stuff. He's not as cute as he was, but, hopefully Timothée Chalamet will stay cute. I feel like I get that same vibe, where it's like him, and it kind of reminds me of, like, the Romeo and Juliet with Claire Danes, yeah.
Was supposed to be Natalie Portman, but
yes,
it's fine.
Those two together kind of reminds me of Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet for some reason. Not the same as, like...
Do you think Saoirse Ronan is a Claire Danes?
I think she's better than Claire Danes.
Also, doesn't Claire Danes play Beth?
Yes, she does. You're right. Oh my gosh. I didn't think about that. But that's what I'm saying. Like, they kind of remind me of, like, that being in the 90s, this being our now. You know what I mean?
I feel like if they're a Leonardo DiCaprio and someone, though, they're a Leonardo DiCaprio and a Kate Winslet.
Yeah. But they're older, though, aren't they? Like, how old were they in Titanic?
In Titanic? Yeah. I think that...
Were they the same age?
They were
age?
In, like, their early 20s.
Oh, okay. Well, then I just didn't know how old they were, because I was thinking of younger. But yeah, mm-hmm. If they're, like, that age, then yeah. Because Saoirse Ronan is a little bit higher than Claire Danes.
I just don't
no
know.
Offense to Claire Danes.
I don't know that I can, like, definitively say that we've had a Saoirse Ronan before.
No, I don't think so either.
Because, like, to have been nominated for Best Actress 3 separate times at her age.
At her age, yeah. And to be so, like, calm, cool, and collected. I've seen interviews of just her.
She comes across as so cool.
Unrelated to movies. Yeah, unrelated to, like, movies. And, like, she's just really, yeah, and I watched her, like,
normal.
Yeah, is it 72 Questions?
Yeah.
Show? Yeah, I watched that one of hers, and it was really funny. And, like, she just seems so cool, she's got that, like, vibe. The vibe check.
And she seems, I feel like Saoirse Ronan is, like, the perfect level of famous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she just has, like, a dignity to her, and she, a gravitas, and, like, she's in all these super successful movies, and she's nominated for all these great awards, but when do you hear about her in tabloids or anything?
And she's not, like,
she's not on social media
either. Like, she's not like, I'm better than all of you, because I, like, there's a lot of young celebrities that, like, let the fame get to their head, and she's not one of them.
Right.
She's definitely, like, taking it on, and it's very
and
mature
I
about it.
I feel like she could, like, walk down a street, and, like, there'd probably be a few people that recognize her, but it's not like she's gonna get, like, hordes of people, like, following
not.
Her.
That'd be cool, because, like, if you're, like, famous, and no one recognizes, like, Sia. No one recognizes her.
All right. Had to bring it back to Sia. Okay, so now I'm gonna ask you, Sarah, do you have a favorite shot from this movie?
Yes, is the scene where the Laurie's confessing his love to Joe. I, like, not just because of that, but because, the background is really pretty. All the, like, leaves are changing. It's like fall, I don't know. It was really nice. And I like how they're both very, like, vulnerable. Like how you said they're both very vulnerable in that scene. And I don't know. It, like, really showed both their talents in my, because, I said Timothée Chalamet was not very good in the movie, but he was okay. But, like, that was one of those scenes where he did better, in my opinion, because he's
great in that scene. I also want to know who styled his hair for that scene.
Yeah.
Because his hair is so all over the place,
it really
but, like,
is.
It works.
But, like, it makes it, like, show you how, like, he's, like, really upset.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't even care about what he looks like right now because he's so upset. He's torn up about, Joe not liking him back. And
in that moment, it feels like they could have swapped clothes.
Yeah.
Like, she's wearing, like, the, like, vest and, like, the little necktie.
And the red, it's, like, a white shirt with, like, red dots or something on it.
It's got, like, the little red, tie.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like, the wind's blowing. Like, it's so, like,
I feel like
extra.
You need to tell the people what you said when seeing that scene, Sarah.
What did I say?
That you were going to get married in that exact spot.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I wanted to get there's, like, a church in the background. It's, like, a little white church. I don't want to get married over there. I want to get married where they're standing so you can see the church in the background. It's so pretty. I love that. The first time watching it, I was like, I'm getting married there. And then I watched it and I said, I'm getting married there.
I was like, all right.
It's so nice. It's like a pretty scene. Like, I don't
really
know. It's really
scene.
Nice. I liked it.
I have been, so I did not know that they were filming on location in Massachusetts for this movie. And then I took a road trip to Concord, Massachusetts last fall, right before the movie came out. And so I had been to some of the places that are featured in the movie on that road trip, like, without realizing it because the movie hadn't come out yet.
I'm jealous.
And so I promise Sarah I'll take her to Concord at some point because yes. It is a really nice trip.
I would like to go. That would be fun.
I have a few favorite shots. Again, I'm not good at narrowing things down to just one in this episode, but my first favorite shot is there's a slow pan out of Beth playing the piano and Mr. Lawrence listening. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really beautiful pan and shot because you have... Beth on like the left hand side of the screen framed by the doorway, and like there's light filtering into that room. Mm-hmm. And then you have Mr. Lawrence like kneeling, like, or like leaning against the banister, like sitting on the stairs listening to her. And that's just, it's a really beautiful shot. I love the shot of Fred proposing to Amy because mm-hmm. it's a wide shot and there's all these trees surrounding them, and it just looks like a painting.
Yeah,
there's so many shots that look like paintings to me. Another one that looks like a painting is Laurie and Amy in a wide shot. It's actually Amy and Laurie is like approaching from the background as like they're about to depart Paris. And then another wide shot of Beth and Joe at the beach with the wispy tendrils of sand in the foreground. That's a really beautiful shot. Looks like a painting. And then the entire sequence of the book printing and binding is really shot to me.
That was really cool. I liked that too.
Yeah. So those are some of my favorite shots. Now, Sarah, do you have a line that makes you laugh the hardest in this movie?
Yes. When Amy... has her foot in the bucket, and she's making, like, an impression of her foot for Laurie.
To remind him that I have beautiful, delicate feet. Yes,
that was so funny, because she couldn't get her foot out. Uh-huh. That was so funny. That made me laugh.
There's a lot of Amy ones that get me really good.
Yeah.
I love it when they're, like, talking about putting on the Christmas play, mm-hmm. and she's like,
oh, yes.
I dyed it blue so she looks like a princess! Yeah. Like, she says it just like that, and, like, that's one of the few moments where I'm like, all right, Florence Pugh could be, like, 10 or 12 years old. Like, yeah. I would buy that.
That's funny.
This is one that I didn't really laugh that hard at until after I heard interviews where the cast was like, this is one of our favorite lines. Then when I, like, caught it the next time, I was like, that's really funny. It's, Beth, what's your favorite eye color? Purple.
Yeah, I remember that. That was so funny. I also like the one where she's standing outside Laurie's window. And she's, like, screaming and crying. Isn't it because she got in trouble at school for drawing the
Amy
picture?
Better.
But and she's, like, crying. And he's, like, well, are you hurt? And she said, no, I'm Amy. That was so funny.
That's the one that, that one went, like, crazy viral on Twitter.
That one was so funny.
I like another Beth one when she says, I've said hello to the horses before. They're very nice. Like, and just Beth just has some lines.
She just said it. Like, it wasn't even like a reaction. Like, she just said it.
And then two more Amy ones. Both are kind of her roasting Joe. When Joe reveals her haircut and Amy goes, you're one beauty.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I remember that.
And then in the scene where Amy's trying to compel Joe to go after Professor Bear.
Yes.
And she says, can you come with me? I need to fix you. And it just, it kills me. Because that's something Michael Riley would say to me.
Yes.
And so that one always gets me. So do you have any other, like, favorite lines? Any other, like, any serious lines maybe that you like?
Not that I can think. I mean, I already said Laura Dern's line. Well, it's more of, like, a monologue than a line. But I like what she said at the end and, like, that whole sequence. I think that was really cool. But besides that, I think that's pretty much it. Like, what you said, too.
I really like Joe saying, well, God hasn't met my will yet. What Joe wills shall be done. Yeah, that one's kind of funny, but kind of serious.
Yeah.
And I also like, I'd rather be a free spinster and paddle my own canoe. That's actually a Louisa May Alcott quote mm-hmm. that Greta Gerwig found elsewhere and thought, hey, that sounds like something Joe would say, and like added it to the screenplay.
That's cool.
This one I really like, and it's one that's, my perception of it has changed over time. It's when Joe says, Amy's always had a talent for getting out of the hard parts of life.
Mm-hmm.
Because Joe's saying it like with such derision, like mm-hmm. Amy doesn't know how to deal with like, Amy doesn't have to deal with the hard parts of life, but that's not true.
Amy carries a lot.
Amy is in Paris with the burden of the family's financial future resting solely on her shoulders. And, like, I understand that Joe is burdened by that as well, but, like, Amy is the one who, like, long-term, because Joe's even said before, like, she says in one of her first scenes with Friedrich, she's like, well, until my sister Amy marries someone obscenely wealthy, I'm supporting my family. Like, the expectation is that Amy is going to take care of everyone.
Yeah.
And so Amy doesn't get to escape the hard parts of life.
No, she doesn't. I mean, her sister died, too. Like, it's not just Joe's sister, you know. The right. Joe show. It's
the
also,
Joe show.
So everyone else's sister. Marmy's daughter. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, I feel like Joe kind of thinks that it's all about her sometimes. And you can see that.
And it also, it struck me more on rewatches, though, like, how kind of sad it is that the expectation is that Joe gets to follow her passion, but Amy has to give hers up.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think that's what made me like Amy more the second and third time and fourth time watching it. I think I realized, I was like, well, Amy's going through it too. Why am I so, like, harsh on her character?
And, like, Amy actually could be a great artist and wants to be, but she has to give her creative passion up.
Yeah. To support the family.
And it's interesting to me that Joe is always encouraging Meg to pursue her creative passion. Like, Joe's always hyping Meg up and be like, you could be a professional actress. Why don't you pursue this? But no one's really in Amy's corner being like, you should be an artist.
And I think that's a good show of, like, siblings, too. It's like Joe kind of taking a stab at Amy because Amy, you know, burns her writings and laughs about it. So, I mean...
And then my favorite Marmy line is when she says to Joe, I pray you'll be a great deal better than me. There are some natures too noble to curve and too lofty to bend. That, like, the first time I saw the movie, I think that was my definitive favorite line. Because I love the notion, Marmy saying that, like, I'm not patient by nature. I'm angry every day of my life. Like, the notion that Marmy is actually, was like Joe.
Yeah.
But managed to curve her nature.
Yeah.
Like, but she wants Joe to be free. Like, she doesn't want Joe to bend her lofty nature.
Yeah.
You know? And so I love that. And then this is a good one that always, I just always think about a lot, is when Joe says, no, writing doesn't confer importance, it reflects it. And Amy says, I don't think so. Writing about them will make them important.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that's a really good, like, thing to ponder. Like, does, and I think that that's what Louisa May Alcott did here, is she took something that wouldn't necessarily be thought of as important by a lot of people at the time of its writing and made it important by writing about it. Like, the stories of these normal four young girls, like, she made them important by writing about them. And so, I don't know, I really like that line. So, Sarah, I have a question for you. I've often said that Lady Bird is a better representation of Greta Gerwig's strength as a writer, while Little Women is a better representation of her skill as a director. Would you agree with that assessment?
I agree with it, because I think in Lady Bird, like, it's not like it was an adaptation. Like, it was her, you know? It's like, I really do. And I mean, she directed well in that, too. Don't get me wrong. I love her directing in it, actually, because I've watched a lot of, like, little interviews and, like, little documentaries and things like that, you know, talking about how the, like, or behind the scenes, I guess you could say, but I've seen a lot of those about Lady Bird, and she's really talented in that as well. But with Little Women, she took something that's been made over and over again and, like, made it new. I don't know, she made it, like, I know I'm the person saying that, even though I've never seen, you know, all the other ones before, but I don't know, it's just like, even my mom was like, yeah, I like that one. I don't know if she liked it more. You know,
she probably likes the Winona Ryder one.
I think she likes that one better, but, like, she still said she really liked this one, but I think she didn't like it for the same reasons, or not didn't like it, but she had the same issues that we had when it came to, like, you know, Laura Dern's, like, I hate, like, making her, like, the
we love you, Laura Dern.
We do love you, Laura Dern. But I think, like, she had the same, like, when it came to, like, the actors, like, with Laurie, and, you know, with you, I think she had the same little, like, things that I said. I think we both kind of had the same opinions on it, but yeah, I agree. I think it showed how great of a director she could be, because, like, I mean, you're taking something that's already been done and remaking it into something new. I think that was really cool. And, like, we talked about how the other adaptations you said are, like, all, like, it's the Joe show. I keep saying that. It's the Joe show. And in this one, it's, like, equally spread out, where each girl gets their own, like, little subplot or their own little, like, storyline in this giant story, you know? Yeah. And I think that's really cool. So I like how she did that. Yeah. So I think she did good with directing in this one and with the writing in
Lady Bird. I do too. I think that she does good with the writing here too, but I don't, it is an adaptation.
Like I said, with, like, the directing with Lady Bird. Right. Like, she did good with both, but
I think, I don't
stronger
think,
with directing.
I don't think that many people realize how much of this movie, like, actually comes down to the screenplay.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, how they all talk over each other and all have different things to say. Like, none of that is improv. That's all in the script.
Yeah.
Like, she actually tells them the exact moment to interrupt and how, what to say. And the screenplay, if you haven't read the screenplay of Little Women, I really recommend you do. I'll actually drop a link to it in the show notes, because it's a beautiful screenplay, especially with how you see the integration of the flashbacks and everything.
Yeah.
So I want us to circle back to Greta Gerwig's direction. But before we do that, I wanted to just briefly mention, like, some of the things that I think are the strengths of this movie that help it stand out amongst all the other Little Women adaptations. The first of which is the costuming. I think that the costuming in this film is really great. We've already mentioned Jacqueline Duran and her genius behind like having Laurie and Joe swap clothes and different things like that. But did you have any thoughts on the costuming?
I liked the color schemes. Like we talked about how they chose a color for each daughter and how Marmee had all the colors in her outfits. I think that was really smart. And I like the styling of the clothing too. Like it didn't seem like, you know, with like Pride and Prejudice, it's just very, and I know she did that too, but like it's very like proper, you know what I mean? And I know this is supposed to be proper too, but it's not like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I just felt more
this feels lived in. Like it feels real.
Yeah, it feels more real to me. Because like the clothing doesn't seem, you know, like it was just like
pulled out of like a museum exhibit or something.
Yeah, like it felt like it was real. Like they have worn it, you know, like you said, it feels lived in. So
I like the like wraps that they wear, like they're made of like out of like the different sweater material. And my favorite piece of costuming is Joe's green coat that she wears when writing that novel. Mm-hmm. I would wear that.
Yes. Like, I mean there's a lot of clothing I'd wear in that movie, but I'd be stared at all the time. So there's no way I could. But yeah, the dresses they wore are really pretty. And like Joe, I like how like she doesn't necessarily have to wear a dress all the time. Like that's kinda like her character. Like she's like, I'm not wearing a dress and like
good. Or for a corset. Or,
so I really like that.
Yeah, Jacqueline Duran has really become like the most sought after like period piece costumer.
She's talented.
But this one to me is my favorite because it does have that lived in quality.
It really does, yeah, for sure.
Next I want to talk briefly about the cinematography. Yorick Lasaw is the cinematographer of this film, and you know, he's been renowned as like one of the most like talented cinematographers, one of the, like people to keep your eye on in film. And one of the decisions that I think really helps bolster the quality of this film is that it's shot on film. It's not shot on digital, which is something that I've talked about on the show before. Like I tend to find myself mentally checking out of films that are shot on digital more so than films that are shot on actual film. And I think that that's one of the things that keeps you engaged, even though it's a 2-hour and 15-minute movie. Yeah. Like, you pay attention because your brain is filling in those blank spots of film.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think there was moments where I was like, I don't think I ever, like, checked out during the movie. I don't think I ever did, because I was thinking about that. I was like, did I? Because usually I do, but I really didn't. It kept my attention, and that's shocking for me. Like, I'm just saying, like, my attention
even span. When Timothée Chalamet wasn't on screen.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was, like, so shocked that I, like, paid attention, because, like, like you said, a period piece. It's gonna be a little boring for me, because I don't like those kind of movies, but I really did enjoy it. So, I mean, I don't know, like, kept my attention.
I also, like, I really like how shots are orchestrated where they do look like paintings. Like, they really do. They look like old oil paintings or something. Yeah. And I think
like
that's
painted
beautiful.
Like Amy painted them
herself. Exactly. Exactly. I wonder if that was done on purpose.
On purpose for Amy. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it is a lot of the shots in Paris.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. You're right.
That's interesting.
And there's that one where, like, she sees Laurie for the first time. That really does look like a painting.
It does. It does. Yeah, when he's walking in slow-mo.
Yeah.
It looks like a painting of, like, a park scene.
Yeah, it does. I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck?
I also wanted to give you the moment to talk about, Sarah, the decision to have the letters read, like, with the actor portraying the person writing the letter, just looking straight into the camera and reading the letter.
I hated that at first. I hated it. I was like, why are they doing that? It's not necessary. I was like, they don't have to do that. But watching it again, I still don't care for that necessarily. I don't think it needs to be in there. But I guess there are some things that I guess it's good to have that. But I don't know. I feel like that's been done a lot recently where people like do that, where they have like the character like look in the camera and like, you know, and that kind of bothers me. I don't really care for that too much. What do they call that? There's like a technical term for it.
They're breaking the fourth wall?
Yes, that's what it is. I don't like that.
There are a couple things in this movie. And again, Greta Gerwig, I think you're a genius. I think you're an auteur. Like, I think you're great.
Oh, yeah.
There are a couple things that are a little awkward in this movie to me. That's one of them. And another thing is the shot at the beginning. Like, there's like a scene and then there's just the shot of the red book. And it says Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, it's, like, bookending so that at the end when they hand Little Women and it says by Jo March to Joe, like, it's bookending it, literally bookending it, like, two shots of a book.
Yeah.
But I just, I don't know, like, I don't feel like the placement of the first one doesn't work well for me.
Yeah, they should have put it in, like, a different, I don't know.
Maybe should have put it at the very beginning when it's got the title card and it's got, like, the, I have many sad stories, so I write jolly tales.
Yeah, it
like,
didn't
after
make
that.
Sense to, like, because I was like, oh, they already showed the title and they showed it again. It doesn't really make sense, you know, because like every movie usually shows the title in there or throws it in somehow, and it's like, that's not,
speaking of throwing it in,
I'm setting you up for this one.
My favorite meme was when it was going around on Twitter, it was like, I want Bob Odenkirk to walk into every movie and just say the title of the movie. So like how he walks in, he's like, My Little Women. So like him just like traipsing into like Jojo Rabbit and being like, Jojo Rabbit. Like anything that's just him saying the title. I love that. I think we need to make that happen. Cast Bob Odenkirk in every movie and all he does
Where
is walk
the
in.
Heart is.
Yeah, exactly. Just walking. Garden State.
Garden State.
I wanted the production design of this movie is really good. I think they do a really good job with props. With they talked in interviews about how Greta Gerwig was so like particular. She was like, I don't want phones on set. I don't want anything on set.
We don't
that's
want
to
Game of Thrones incident.
Yeah,
with Starbucks cups.
Exactly.
Sorry,
but like, I don't blame her for that.
Didn't they have an incident with this one?
I think
it was
they
a water
did.
Bottle.
It was a water bottle. It was
I
a swell,
so.
Wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I remember because I remember like people tweeting about it.
Yeah, but she tried
really
hard,
yeah.
And I really respect it. There's also an owl on the dresser. It's like a like ceramic owl on the dresser that Joe hides her novel in that we have in my house. Like, we have that exact owl.
Really?
And so every time it's on screen, I'm like, oh, I own a piece of Little Women.
Like, oh my god.
I don't actually, like, it's not the same owl,
yeah,
but like,
that's so cool though.
Yeah.
You could sell it on eBay and be like,
this
is the actual
this is
the
owl from Little Women.
$1 million first bid. Let's go.
Timothy Chalamet has touched this owl. And then another thing that works really well is the score. Alexandra Desplat does a great job. One thing I wanted to note is that I didn't notice until this rewatch is that the score cuts out completely upon Joe's realization of Beth's death. And it kicks back in, but the only time it plays like really loudly beyond that is when she's writing the novel, when she's like bringing Beth back to life through her words. And so the fact that it cuts out at Beth's death kind of made me feel on this viewing like it's like Beth was providing the music.
Yeah.
Because Beth was always at the piano.
And I wonder if that's how they paid homage to her.
Like
they
Amy
with
paintings.
Yeah.
I really think that there's something to that.
We're putting it all together.
We see you, Greta Gerwig.
Yes, our theories are coming together.
So I have a few like wrapping up questions for you, Sarah. I want us to talk specifically about the structure of the movie. Because it can be a little discombobulating.
Especially if you hadn't seen anything prior to this. It was very confusing.
Yeah, and that's actually, I didn't, when I took my mom to see this movie, I told my dad not to come. Because my dad is the type of movie viewer that he would be, like, angry.
Yeah.
He'd be like, why doesn't it make sense? Why isn't it happening in order?
I wasn't necessarily angry.
No, I know, but he cannot process non-linear storytelling.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you, like, is it too confusing? Does it add to the effectiveness of the story?
Yeah, I mean, my mom was even confused. And I mean, she's seen, you know, the one, I don't know how, I'm sure she's seen the other ones too. I don't, my mom likes Little Women, so I don't know. But, when I asked her, she was also confused. And cause she's like, I think that's why she didn't really care for it as much, is cause how it was set up. I don't think she cared for that. But I mean, I liked it. This, like, if you take that part out, like, it's great, you know, but adding that in the first time watching it, I was just, I don't know, like, it threw me off, you know, like, it didn't let me enjoy the movie because I was trying to figure out what was going on. And I kind of wish it wasn't like that for my first time viewing it, or at least I had some back. I should have just watched the other movies before going, because I think that would have helped. But I was like, at least done some research to know what was going on, because I was literally like, I was lost, like, I didn't know who was what. And like, when Laurie came back and was like talking to her, and like, you know, when it was like, was that was not a flashback. That was like happened present. Like, I thought it was a flashback. It was
when she woke up and
Laurie's
there.
Yes, I thought that was a flashback, but wasn't that present?
Yeah, that's in present.
Yeah, see, I was so confused. I didn't know what was going on. And then after I talked to you about it, and then we watched it together, and then the third time I watched it, that's when I was able to decipher what was happening, I guess you could
what's
say.
What's present and what's flashback.
Yeah, because I was super duper confused the first two times. Even the second time I was confused.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on.
I personally, I'm a fan of non-linear storytelling.
I like
things like that.
I like stuff like that. I want it to make sense.
Quentin Tarantino. Sorry to be basic, Sarah, but I really like Quentin Tarantino. I love Fosse Verdon, the miniseries, and its non-linear approach to storytelling. I like it when stories are structured thematically rather than chronologically. And I think that Greta Gerwig does that really effectively here.
Yeah.
I do think that it was a risk she took, and it does mean that certain people aren't going to like the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain people.
Definitely.
Dad is not going to put in the legwork to figure out. But it also, I think, is a really, like, I think Louise May Alcott might would have appreciated it because, you know, the book was written in two separate volumes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so basically, you told me that the second time we watched
basically it. What Greta Gerwig did is she layered the two volumes mm-hmm. on top of one another, mm-hmm. which I feel like is a really true to the essence of the story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I like it. And I think that it gives her the opportunity to have some really effective and evocative transitions.
Yeah.
Like I love, I don't, every time I rewatch it, I find a new appreciation for the transitions. Like, until today's rewatch, I didn't realize that the reason she flashes back to the night she meets Laurie while she's dancing with Friedrich and all the people in New York is because she's thinking about dancing.
Yeah.
So she goes from dancing with all the people in New York, but it starts with her getting Meg ready. But the crux of the story is her and Laurie dancing. So, like, that's why those scenes go together.
Yeah.
And then Aunt March, her telling Amy that she has to marry Wealthy, the next scene, that's in the past, and then it goes to the present of Amy telling her that she's turned down Fred Vaughn's proposal. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's a very effective transition.
Yeah.
And then the best one, though, is Joe running down the stairs afraid that Beth has passed away, and she finds Beth well and at the table.
Yeah.
And then it transitions to her walking slowly down the stairs, and it's Marmee alone sobbing. That one
was
sad.
That hit me. I was like, because then I knew there were some scenes I didn't know what was happening. At the same time, there was other scenes that were like pivotal moments that I didn't know when they happened, because I was just confused.
So did the color grading help you?
That once you told me that, yes, it did. Because then I was like, oh, this is... And then I told my friends who watched it with me the third time, I told them, I said, pay attention to the color. Because like, I told them, I was like, it switches around a lot. Mm-hmm. And one of them had like really like watched... Well, no, I think both of them had really like... They liked Little Women and knew a lot about it, I think. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. I know one of them did. I'm not sure about the other girl. But I think that it helped them appreciate it more. Because like, if I were going into it the first time, I think it would have been better for me to know more about it and, like, the color grading and things, because then I would have been able to pay attention. I mean, I paid attention, but, like, it would have helped me follow along better. That might have been why it held my attention, was because I was so confused. I was trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's part of it, too. I do think that, like, it being confusing makes it stand out amongst all the other adaptations.
Yeah.
For those of you listening at home, hopefully you've seen this movie. If you've only seen it once, you might not have paid super close attention to the color grading. If you've seen it more than once, hopefully you've recognized this, but Greta Gerwig uses color grading to let you know which part of the story you're in that given moment. So scenes that are colored blue are taking place in the present timeline, and scenes which are colored yellow or golden are flashbacks. And I like that, because then it's like, it's Joe like looking back on with fondness. Yeah. So like it's golden.
Golden, And the present's kind of gloomy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It really is. Dies and Laurie's no longer,
So my first time watching the movie, I was just paying attention to the hairstyles, trying to figure out what time it is. But then the second time, I was like, it's color graded.
I think that's what I was trying to do. Because I was like, when did she cut her hair? And then I was like, wait. And then I like, I really tried to figure it out through that, and it did not help me at all.
So I think it's a really effective use of color grading.
Well, and also like how they're acting too. Like when if she's acting childish, then I knew it was a flashback. But if she was acting more like mature and you know after Beth dies, you can tell because she wears the black dress for like a few scenes and things like that. That's how I kind of tried to follow along for the first two viewings. It was difficult, but I tried following along that
way. On the subject of the color grading, the ending, we have to talk about the ending. So which ending do you think is accurate, like between Joe founding the school and them all working there and them celebrating Marmee's birthday and then Joe getting her book bound?
I don't really know. When you told me it was like left up to interpretation, I didn't see it like that, I guess you could say. The way I saw it, because again, you know, time wise I was kind of confused, but seeing it like how she presented it, like where they're all at the end and they're all together, and there's like is it Meg who has the school, right?
Joe has the school,
I'm getting their names confused. She where like when she comes out and like her whole family's in the backyard, that's just what I thought the ending was. I was like, okay. And then her getting the book, I was like, oh cool. I didn't think of
The sequence of the school is shot in gold.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be like a flashback or
something. The sequence of the book being bound is in blue.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, watching it the second time, thought, okay, so what's gold isn't just flashback. It's what's gold is the plot of the book.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because the book is her playing with her sisters and everything, because that's what Beth tells her to write about.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Dashwood compels her to have her heroine get married and everything settle.
Yes.
So I think her going after Friedrich and everything beyond that is just within the book.
Yeah.
And that her getting the book handed to her
was what actually
is what actually happens. Because if you read the screenplay, Greta Gerwig actually puts fiction before all of the scenes with the school. So it's fiction question mark.
You gotta send this to me so I can read. I'm looking at it right now for the audience at home. You gotta send this to me.
So it's fiction question mark, but then the final shot, the past or maybe fiction or maybe both, the shot of all the young girls playing. So I like though that it's not so heavy-handed that, like, if you're a romantic at heart and you want to believe that Joe does find that someone that makes her happy.
I was like, yes, Joe, but like, also I wanted you to be with Laura.
Yeah.
I could not.
But so I think it's one of the strengths of the movie that Greta Gerwig basically lets you choose your own adventure.
That's kind of like the plot of the movie too, is like how she's letting all the girls like be able to pick what they want. You know what I mean? Like how Meg wanted to have a husband,
and so
how
it's
Joe
kinda
wanted to be independent, and how Amy wanted to be an artist, but she had to support the family, and how Beth died. So I'm just saying, I think it just shows you.
It's kind of like a nice thing, though. It's saying to all the women watching, it's like, if you're the type of viewer that wants Beth, I mean, Beth's gonna die. If you want Joe to be happy and find someone that makes her happy in a relationship, you can have that.
Or you want her to be in school.
Well,
I guess she does have both
of that. Or if you want her to be alone but be a successful novelist, you can have that too. Or
you could have both.
You could have both.
That was me. I wanted both. I was like, yes, queen.
And so I just think it's nice that.
So I guess that's like what I was trying to say, is that like my first time watching it, I wanted both. But like I did it like non-conscious. Like I wasn't thinking like two different options. I think I just automatically assumed she got both.
Yeah. But I think that Greta Gerwig.
What did you think?
Well, the first time I watched it?
What did you want to happen?
This is contrarian to, like, me as, like, yay feminism and everything, but I always want there to be romance, in everything I watch. Like, I literally, I was the kid that was like, Fred and Daphne have to get together, you know? Like, I just
Anakin.
Exactly. I was in love with Anakin, and Anakin and Padme's relationship was my favorite thing. So, like, I just wanted there to be romance. So, I like that. I also like, because this movie, one thing we didn't talk about in the cast, this movie makes Frederick Bear a lot more romantic and like good of a match for Joe than other things do.
You told me about that because I didn't really care for him that
but
much.
He's a lot better in this than
You told me in other ones he wasn't, because I didn't really care for him, but
in other ones he's
that.
Just stuffy and boring,
and in this one he wasn't as like, I don't know, when you told me that he didn't seem boring.
And Greta Gerwig really drives home, like, it feels like he has an actual connection with Joe. Like, he connects with her on an intellectual level.
Oh, intellectual, that's what I was saying.
And so, I like the notion that they get together, but I also feel like, you know, Joe is supposed to be somewhat of an autobiographical representation of Louisa May Alcott. Mm-hmm. Louisa May Alcott never married.
Mm-mm.
And so, I think that Greta Gerwig's intention is that she gets her book, and the rest is the plot of the book. But she doesn't do it so heavy-handedly that, like, viewers who want Joe to find someone can't.
Because I automatically assumed both.
Yeah.
Like, when you brought up that to me, I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. Because it did seem weird to me watching the movie why there was different colors all the time. I was like, why is it, like, blue filter? Why is it, or like, yellow gold filter? Like, I was so confused with that. I was like, okay, that's weird. But then when you told me that, I was like, oh, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
She was, like, being clever. And I'm just stupid.
Greta Gerwig is an auteur. Like, she is. That's one of the reasons I'm so confident in saying, like, she's one of the most talented directors alive today.
No, she definitely is. I agree with you. And the thing is, this is the kind of movie you have to see multiple times to fully understand.
Right, which is the point of this podcast.
Yeah. There you go, rewatching. So there you go.
So I did want to make mention of the communal aspect of seeing this film in a theater. Like, maybe I'm just super sentimental because this was the last movie I saw in theaters, but I think that this is a really good example of a trend that existed in 2019 specifically, where it was like, we just had good movies that were bolstered by the theatrical experience.
Yeah.
Like, this movie in particular, it just feels cinematic.
Yeah.
Like, when I watch it, I know it's not on as grand of a scale as Gone with the Wind, but it feels like an epic.
Yeah,
you know
it does,
what I mean?
No, I agree.
And so, And the epic is made even better by seeing it with other people and having other people laugh.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I think that I was talking to you about this earlier before we started recording, I even said that I feel like in the scenes where they're like all talking over each other and the theater audience would just be laughing, it almost felt like you were right there with them, like you were adding to the vitality of the moment, you know? And so I just think that 2019 was a really special time in film. Maybe it's that we're looking back on it even more fondly now.
But no, I mean, I agree. There was a lot of like big movies in 2019 that I really enjoyed. So I agree with you on that.
And
yeah, like you said, like now we're just looking back on it because this year has been terrible.
Now it's blue and we're looking back on the gold time and we're like, oh, like take
Beth
me back.
Dies. That's what it feels like every day. I'm just like, Beth died.
Well, I'm not even going to lie to you. So I hadn't watched this movie since January until today. Same. And when they're like, we have to send Amy away because she hasn't had it yet. I was like, ooh, oh, quarantine.
No. Oh no, poor Amy.
I also wanted us to mention before we like really start closing, Joe's I'm so lonely moment. That moment of vulnerability in that epic monologue was left out of all the promotional material for this movie. So all this movie had the women, they have hearts. And they have minds as well as hearts, and they have ambition, you know, as well as just, and I'm so, the people keep saying love is all a woman is fit for, and I'm so sick of it. And it just cut off there. Yeah, like none of the promotion material included, but I'm so lonely.
I think she did that on purpose though.
I do too.
I think more people to come see it.
I think it was like, yeah, this is all going to be women empowerment. Yeah. But then when you get in there, like, it's like, this vulnerable. Is a nuanced, accurate portrayal of the totality of womanhood.
And it really is. And like, I think that was smart on her part for doing that because it makes people like, oh my gosh, yes, you know, but then they're like, but that's actually like real life. You know what I mean? It's real. You know what I mean? Like that, it feels more real than if she were just like, yeehaw, go women. Yeehaw. You know? And I mean, I agree. I'm all for that. But like,
I'm all for yeehaw, go women.
Yes, but I feel like there's still like the reality of like when Joe was like, I'm so lonely, like that kind of stuff happens. Like you can't be strong 24/7.
Right.
I like that.
And I have to say at this point, shout out to Caitlin Berg, because thanks to her, I have watched Joe's monologue a million times. Caitlin Berg and I were together on Oscar night. And she kept playing that monologue all throughout the Oscar ceremony. And she mentioned that she thinks but I'm so lonely is the best part of the whole thing. And I agree. I had already thought that, but her having someone else say it like validated my opinion, you know. I was like, no, I
me
agree.
Me and you, when we talk about movies, we're like, wait, but did you like that? And we both have the same and I'm like, good.
We're like, all right, we're okay.
Yes.
But I think that I also love the meme that became like, I laugh so
there's
hard
so
every
many
time.
Memes from this movie.
This movie is very memeable. Thank you, Greta Gerwig, for giving us. We needed this in society. We needed the laughs. So are there any other strengths we haven't mentioned before we fully circle back to Greta Gerwig specifically?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Costuming, score, production design, acting.
Well, the acting, I don't know if it necessarily is a strength. Well, it depends.
Let's talk specifically about Greta Gerwig for just a minute, because I reblogged this Tumblr post the day of the Academy nominations for the films
Tumblr.
Of 2019.
Girl. Yeah. Tumblr's so old.
I love Tumblr.
That's like 2013.
Don't come for me. I love Tumblr. Now, Tumblr, like, it's a cesspool. Like, it's awful, but, like, I can't get off of it.
Yeah.
So, because...
Here I am with no social media except for Instagram, and you're going back on Tumblr.
I've always been on Tumblr. I've taken no break since, like, 2012.
I can't.
So, but anyways, I reblogged this post on Tumblr. Thanks for roasting me,
Sarah.
Sorry. That's all it said was, so, does the Academy think that Little Women directed itself? Because Little Women was nominated in, like, almost every major category except Best Director. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Score, I believe Best Cinematography. Don't quote me on that. But, like, it was nominated
I think that is
quite a few categories.
Yeah, because I remember rooting for it the entire time, being like,
and,
you know.
It was just, and costume design.
Yeah.
And
they won costume design, didn't they?
I think they did.
I think they did.
Greta Gerwig did not score. She didn't score an Oscar nom. She didn't score a Golden Globe nom.
She's a woman.
My favorite, actually, I take back. I love the Baby Yoda interview, but my favorite interview from the entire promotion of this was Greta Gerwig on, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel. It was one of the late night shows when she was talking about how she went to the Golden Globes to support Saoirse and Laura Dern and Noah, but she herself wasn't nominated, and so she got there really early because she was like, I don't have to walk the red carpet. And all the members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association came up to her and were like, oh, we're so sorry you're not nominated. We voted for you. And after, like, the third person, she was like, but you didn't.
Yeah.
Because seriously. If you did, I'd be nominated.
Yeah, it's true.
And so.
It's so true.
Let's start with, did Greta Gerwig deserve a Best Director nomination? Yeah, absolutely.
You don't even have to finish the sentence. Yes.
She
deserves it. Like, I don't know why. It's just they're sexist. They don't want a woman to win anything, so, or be nominated for anything.
I still cannot believe it's such a slight. Like,
yeah.
And honestly, I'm not gonna say that she, like, absolutely deserved to win, because, like, Bong Joon-ho, like,
he's great too.
But Greta Gerwig, like,
a nomination.
Little Women
even,
is
not even a nomination.
Yeah, like, she didn't even get nominated. She didn't get nominated at any of the major
awards,
which
is crazy.
But, like, I would contend that, I'm not saying let's take it away from Bong Joon-ho.
No, yeah, no. I
think Greta Gerwig was his best competition for
it. I think so, too. And she wasn't, like, even nominated. It's,
like,
crazy.
I'm a huge Noah Baumbach fan. I am a Quentin Tarantino stan. And, like, I really think that Greta Gerwig, her direction might have been better than both of theirs.
Quentin Tarantino, he always gets nominated for... He could sit this one out.
Okay, but stop. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was my favorite movie of 2019.
Yeah,
so.
Not so much for me. It was good. It was just not my favorite.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But I still think that Greta Gerwig, as a director...
She deserved to be nominated.
She deserved to be nominated above... most people in that category.
Definitely. And I would say she could have been.
I think she could have won.
Yeah. I agree.
And so I'm very, very
bitter.
Upset. I'm always
I'm bitter.
Here are the all male nominees.
I hate that. They irritate me. That's the only thing I don't like when I'm watching these award shows is, like, it makes me so, like, I'll scream at the TV. I literally scream at the TV all the time.
I also,
it's like football. It's like you know how people are obsessed with sports.
Sarah, the Golden Globes back 2 years ago was one of the first times we, like, really hung out.
Oh yeah,
and that was the night of the all male nominees.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. We watched a lot of award shows together, didn't we? Like, we pretty much do that. Yeah.
But also, since we're talking about award shows, since we're talking about now here are the all-male nominees, circling it back to Natalie Portman and Timothy Chalamet, they presented the award at the Oscars.
Oh my gosh,
for,
that was, like, perfect
yes,
for us.
It was, for Best Adapted Screenplay. And I love Jojo Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Jojo Rabbit, actually, my official ranking of my top three movies from 2019 is the order in which I'm doing them for the podcast. So it's Little Women at third, Jojo Rabbit at second, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at first. Those are my three favorite movies from 2019. And I mean, like, they're all really close. I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is clearly
my favorite.
See, that's
how mine was, is they're all kind of too close to say for me.
I think Taika Waititi is such a talented director, such a talented screenwriter. But honestly, reading the screenplay of Little Women, it's so beautiful. Like, it's so well written. I love the closing line, kills me. It's Joe's handed the book. It says, Joe turns it over in her hands, touching it like the holy object it is. And then skipping ahead, Joe looks up and sees the future. I really think Greta Gerwig is our best adapted screenplay.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of things Greta Gerwig deserves.
There are.
But they just take it away from her. It's so upsetting.
And, you know, like, I love Taika Waititi. I'm happy for him.
Yes,
I loved Jojo Rabbit. Thought it was a great screenplay. And I'm not, again, it's not me saying let's physically take the Oscar away from him.
No, yeah.
But it's just, do you know how powerful it would have been to be able to see Timothy Chalamet and Natalie Portman hand an
Give
Oscar
it
to Greta,
Greta
Gerwig.
Gerwig? I know. We literally, both of us were like, we were texting each other during it, and I was like, I hope they say Greta Gerwig. We were both, like, freaking out, and I just remember,
like,
that.
Natalie Portman and Greta Gerwig are, like, really good friends, and Timothy Chalamet has worked with her multiple
times. That was, like,
times,
perfect for
and
us.
It was.
It didn't happen. It's okay.
All right, so let's wrap up with, I've added one additional wrap-up question. So I always end with, is this film worth a rewatch, and how would you convince someone of that fact? But before that, I want to ask you, Sarah, how does this film fair for you comparatively to other 2019 releases? Like, where does this rank for you? I just said where it ranked for me.
It's probably number one for me, if I'm being quite honest, because I've seen, like I said, I freaking saw Cats. I saw Cats in 2019 in theaters. It's one of the last movies I saw, and I instantly regret that that was the one that I watched. And I was like, right after I got my wisdom teeth taken out. So I was like, not even like conscious. So I was like, I was done. And so I watched that with my brother. We were late to the theater too. It was funny. So we missed like the first like 30 minutes of it, but I was okay with it. Like, I could follow along. Cats was terrible though, but that's definitely the last, you know, that was like my least favorite of 2019. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I watched a lot of like not good movies in 2019. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watched some better, but I didn't watch them like in 2019. I watched them recently, so I don't really want to count those. Mm-hmm. But I would say Little Women's probably my favorite. I don't know, because that one really like hit home with me. I liked it a lot, even though, you know, mm-hmm. took me a few minutes to catch on, but yeah. I really did like it.
Little Women, there's something about it though where like this might not make sense, and like I'm thinking this as I'm saying it, so I probably should have like written this down beforehand, because I'm worried I'm not going to verbalize it well. But like, when I think of favorite films from 2019, I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but I feel like 20 years from now, if you ask me, like I think Little Women has a staying yeah. power, because like I said, it just transcends so many things, and it feels epic in scale.
You know, I'm surprised you didn't mention Frozen 2. I'm so shocked.
Frozen 2. So my top five.
It's Frozen 2's in there.
It's Marriage Story at 4 and Frozen 2 in number 5.
I cannot. Whatever. Whatever.
I love Frozen 2. We'll be doing an episode on that one shortly.
I will not be the guest for that one.
No, you won't. I saw Frozen 2 four times in theaters.
Oh, Lord.
It's tied with Cars for the movie I've seen the second most time in theaters. Oh. I saw Jackie 5 times, 4 times in 4 days, and then a separate 5th time.
Did we see Frozen 2 together?
I think we did.
I think we watched it together.
If I saw it 4 times, I had to see it with you one time.
Yeah. I feel like we did.
I think we did.
Because I came to Tifton, you know.
Yeah.
I just gave away where you lived.
It's okay. I've said Tipton on here before.
I came to Georgia and I watched it with you there too.
Because I saw it with Jordan and Emily the first time, and then I saw Michael and Caleb, and then I saw it with you, and then I saw it with my mom.
Okay, so yeah, then I did see it with you.
But yeah, I think that long term though, like I think Little Women's really going to stand the test of time.
And like, that's something you show your kids. And,
all right.
Like, you know, watch it with your daughter.
And I think it's going to be like, when we're talking about like best films of the decade, like it's going to make the cut and stuff like that.
Definitely. It's one of my favorite movies, like,
yeah,
of all time, which is a lot.
And I will say, Little Women and Jojo Rabbit, a lot of times it depends which one I've seen most recently.
Yeah.
The only reason Jojo Rabbit edges it out is like, I know I've talked a lot about how much I love the cinematography of this movie, but man, Jojo Rabbit mm-hmm. is a beautiful film.
The colors are really pretty.
The colors are so pretty. It's got
that vibe to it.
Like, yeah, I just really love it. Yeah. I'm not going to go into details because you guys are going to hear about it in just a couple weeks here on the podcast, so stay tuned for that. So my final question, Sarah, which you've already pretty much answered the first part, but is this a movie worth rewatching, and how would you convince someone of that fact?
I think, yeah, it is. It is one worth rewatching. That's coming from someone who never rewatches stuff. We've talked about that before. I never rewatch movies unless I really like them. If Timothée Chalamet's in it, then I'll rewatch it. But yeah, I think this one, you can rewatch it because, like, one, there's no way you like immediately understand what's going on the first time you watch. Like, there's always something that you got to figure out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, or like, understand better. So like, that's one reason to rewatch it, is like just understanding it better. And then second time, you know, if you're like, watch it again and you still like, I don't know, it's just got that, like you said, it's gonna last, like it's gonna stick more,
it's got staying power.
So it's one of those that I like rewatching, because it's like, you want to hear those powerful lines delivered. I know I like crapped a lot on the movie and like the character stuff, but I really did like it. It's one of my favorite movies. But I think I gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd, and I think I hearted it too, and so or liked it, or whatever they call it on there. But yeah, it's definitely worth rewatching, because you want to be able to like enjoy it, you know, and like fully understand it. And like I said, you can show it to like your family members, or like mm-hmm. you can always show it to someone, you know. Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those things, you notice something different every time.
Like, that's what I was trying to say.
That's the point of this podcast, is like the value of the rewatch, but this movie more so than most others.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's even more to be noticed each time.
Yeah.
So is there anything we haven't said, Sarah?
I don't think so. We covered a lot.
You think we covered it all? We sped through my notes, so look how many notes I have.
Yeah, you had a lot of notes. We I think we covered it all.
All right. Yeah. So I'm really glad you were my guest for this episode,
yes,
Sarah.
Yes, me too. Yeah. Finally, it's Timothy Chalamet. Yep.
One of these
days. We
gotta
do Miss Stevens or something.
Yeah, I do want to do Miss Stevens at some point, actually. Yeah. So this has been Play It Again, Kyla. As always, if you have suggestions of films you would like to hear discussed, don't hesitate to reach out. You can find the podcast with the handle Play It Again, Kyla on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you can find me personally at Kyla_Z_Percival on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd. Once again, this is Play It Again, Kyla. I am your host, Kyla Percival, signing off and saying I voted for Andy Kaufman.